tinkering.
Let's go ahead and we'll call the November 28th meeting of the Board of Adjustment to order. Roll call, please.
Youngberg.
Here.
Neubauer.
Here.
Scarlett.
Here.
Brecky.
Here.
Video absent.
Okay. Before we get started, if anyone in the audience has not signed in to the sign-up sheet, if you please would, we'd appreciate that. And then during the meeting, if you are going to speak, we need you to go over to the lectern, or the whatever it's called.
Podium.
Podium, thank you. I'm back at church. And we ask that you state your name as well as your address before you start to speak. Were we ready?
I think so.
Okay. We did roll call. Approval of the agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda?
Move the accept the agenda for today.
Second.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Okay. Minutes of the previous meeting. In your packet, you have the October 17th minutes from our last meeting. Are there any changes that we need to make to the minutes? Anybody see anything when they reviewed them? No? Okay, then I need a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Okay, so we did that. The approval of findings of fact. Jerry, do you want to talk us through that, please?
Right. I'll just give you some background information. On a previous conditional use permit that was approved by the Board of Adjustment, there was an adjacent landowner that challenged the decision of the Board of Adjustment. That issue was ultimately decided by a judge who overturned the Board of Adjustment's decision based on a 1979 court case that indicated that Boards of Adjustment should have considered written findings of fact. Up until this point, we haven't, as staff, we haven't prepared written findings of fact. So what you have before you are the written findings of fact for the three previous Board of Adjustment cases from the October 17th meeting. And so what we're asking is for the Board of Adjustment to take action. You can take action on each one separately, or as a group, you can take action.
Okay.
But this is something that we will actually record along with the additional information for this case.
Okay.
So this is something new.
This is something new.
Okay.
And so do you have a recommendation that we do three in one, or?
I think it's up to the Board of Adjustment. You can collectively take action on all three. You can act on each one separately. There's an area on the document to identify the tally of the vote as well as the signature from the chair.
So does the board have a preference if we do each one separately or if we do all of them as one?
I think all at once.
Okay, all at once, okay.
All right.
Okay, so then we need a motion to approve the written findings of facts for those three cases. If someone would like to make that motion.
I'd make a motion that we approve the written findings of fact. Three cases that are in front of us here, the CUP 07-16, 17, and 18.
Okay. And you
second.
Okay. Do you want a roll call vote or?
Just
voice. Okay. So all those in favor of approving those written findings of fact, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Same sign. So they passed.
What can you fill us in a little, like, what does that mean for us? I mean, do we go to jail tonight?
No, it's just an extra step, really, that with your decision-making, that the information that's in these written findings of fact are information from the staff report, the written analysis, the findings the staff found, things that we discussed, things that we presented. We incorporated information from those that were in attendance at the meeting, the discussion that took place from the general public, the discussion that took place from the Board of Adjustment members. And ultimately, it's another thing that the Board of Adjustment is to consider when they're reviewing a case.
So how does this help the home or the landowner? I'm assuming this is to be beneficial for the landowner.
If the decision is to approve it, then it would benefit the landowner. But we prepare a lot of information for the Board of Adjustment to consider these cases, the written report, the site photos, pretty thorough analysis. We provide all the information that was submitted on the from the applicant. You have the benefit of the hearing for these things, so you know what comments are being made from the general public. And so you are to include in your consideration all those things plus these written findings of fact when you make decisions. So it's just another thing that, based on this court case, based on the decision of that judge who rendered that decision, that it's something that you need to consider. And this is something that we're doing. I can tell you that the county is challenging, we're appealing that decision that was made. So we're moving forward on the appeal.
Okay.
As that develops, I can tell you more.
Okay, and is this something that the planning and development group, when they meet too, they will be passing that information on to us?
Specifically what? Like, some of these things do go to Planning and Zoning Commission.
They go there first,
right,
and then they come here. So would there be information from this written findings of fact that might benefit us?
Yeah, we usually put that in the staff report.
Okay.
You know, comments from the general public, discussion from the commissioners.
Okay, yeah.
For the Board of Adjustment to consider.
Oh, is this the only board that's doing that?
Right now, yes.
Yeah.
So, Jerry, what would happen if the Board of Adjustment went against staff's recommendation and denied or approved opposite of what staff recommended? Would they have to create their own written findings of fact?
Potentially, or we would draft it such that it would be in accordance to their findings.
Okay.
In that case.
Sounds like you would have to maybe either add to those finding of facts or pretty much that, because obviously you're going to come up with a written finding of facts, but if it's not detailed enough for the board, then the board probably can request further research and or finding of facts.
And legal department suggested that we bring this the following meeting so that we can incorporate what was discussed at the meeting in the public hearing.
Great. All right. Well, let's go on to public comments. So this is the time that members of the public can offer comments concerning matters that are not currently on our agenda. So does anybody in the crowd here have anything they want to say? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to our first discussion and consideration of CUP 10-17, Pleasant Grove Community Church, accessory structure and parking areas. Emily.
Okay, we are without a projector today, so bear with us here. We provided you a copy of the staff report and then also a large copy of both site plans associated with this request. So the small sheet is a duplicate. I just wanted to print it larger for you so you could maybe see it. So this is a request for conditional use permit. The request is from for Pleasant Grove Community Church to construct a new accessory structure and also two parking areas to be located at their current facility at 56971 170th Street. This is northeast of Ames in Milford Township. The applicant is Jerry Nelson on behalf of Pleasant Grove Community Church. So there are two parcels involved in this request. One is the one on which the church is located on the north side of 170th Street, which is your site plan layout is A1.0. This is a 2-acre parcel, and it's currently zoned A1 agricultural, used as a religious facility, used for the church. The future land use map designation is rural residential natural resource area. Most of the land on the east side and then to the north of the property is wooded in what we consider a natural area in the county. There are no cities within 2 miles, but the Nevada Fire Department, Nevada Services this area, the Nevada Community School District, Mary Greeley Ambulance District, it's the Iowa Regional Utilities Association, the Midland Power Cooperative, and this is located within the South Skunk River watershed. So just a little bit of background on this, on the church itself. Pleasant Grove was constructed in 1873 and remains without modern amenities such as running water, restrooms, septic system. The existing restroom facilities are limited to an outhouse. In 2010, the church was placed on the National Register of Historic Places. The church currently has between 20 and 25 members attending church each Sunday. Access to the church is traveling east from the city of Gilbert on 170th Street, or traveling west on 170th from 570th. Access from the Interstate 35 requires taking the exit at 190th Street, traveling about 2 miles north on 570th Avenue. In terms of parking for the church, historically, parking has taken place within the 170th Street right-of-way. From review of aerial photography, it does appear that some parking spaces for the eastern portion of the parking area are located near or on the road surface. This parking has been addressed through the conditional use permit application. And we want to thank Pleasant Grove Church for working with us. We've been working on this for quite some time and helping us to reach a solution that we think is safe for both the members of the church and the general public. So Pleasant Grove Community Church purchased this property from the Iowa National Heritage Foundation, who had previously agreed to a access easement for Story County Conservation to access their property, which is located to the north of Pleasant Grove Church. Through that purchase agreement, so then the church purchased the property from the Iowa National Heritage Foundation, and so that easement remained as a condition of the purchase. So I guess it's a little hard to understand, but let me know if you have questions and we can move forward. The main thing is that Pleasant Grove Community Church is and will be working with Story County Conservation to work on the site improvements to the north of 170th Street. This will allow Story County Conservation to access their, provide public access to the trail to the north. Okay? So the access will be a 20-foot wide access easement. And then 5 parking spaces for public access. The agreement indicates that Story County Conservation will create a driveway access and 5 spaces on the east side of the property. If you look at the site plan A1.0, you can see those 5 spaces right on the east side. There's a 20-foot wide access easement that extends north from 170th Street to the property, which is directly north of this subject property. With that taking place, Pleasant Grove Church would also like to build an accessory structure which would allow them to have modern amenities for their church members. And then a parking area, which would include ADA compliant parking and on-site parking. Pleasant Grove Community Church felt as though what they could get for on-site parking wasn't going to be sufficient. We did not recommend them continuing to park within the right-of-way. So the compromise we came up with was on your second site plan, an additional parking area to the south of 170th Street on the west side of 569th Avenue. This will be a gravel parking area, 26 spaces. The ADA compliant spaces for this section of the parking lot were located in the north area, as this is better access for better ADA access to the building. You don't have to go across the gravel road there.
Do they own this property?
They will be acquiring it shortly. Mm-hmm. So, let's see. So the church will also install a 6-foot wide sidewalk from the west end of the parking area to the church. On the north, the parking area on the north, there'll be a sidewalk that extends west to the church itself, and also to the proposed accessory building, which, as you can see on the site plan, is directly north of that parking area on the north side of the road. They will meet the landscape requirements of the Story County Land Development Regulations. One thing I haven't mentioned yet is there is the Milford Township Cemetery is located kind of inside the backward C shape of this parcel. So they will also have an access easement that comes off the Story County access easement for general public access to the cemetery. The subject property does have access to the Iowa Regional Utilities Association water service, but is not currently connected as they don't have modern facilities. The church will connect the proposed accessory building to the rural water. So this project is planned in three phases, with the first being the parking area on the north side of the road. The second phase will be the addition of the 26-stall parking area on the south side of 170th Street. The third phase will be the construction of the accessories building. The actual construction date is unknown at this time, according to the applicant, but the project will need to comply with the timeline set forth in Chapter 90 of the Story County Land Development Regulations. So in terms of the conditional use permit analysis, the first development criteria that we look at is compatibility. Pleasant Grove Community Church has existed in this location for nearly 150 years. Churches are permitted through an approved conditional use permit in the A1 district where they're located. All proposed improvements will meet setback requirements put forth in the Story County Land Development Regulations. The second item is transition. There are numerous trees buffering the proposed accessory structure and parking area on the east side. As stated by the application, the Milford Township Cemetery also provides a buffer to the single-family dwelling, which is located directly to the west of the property. The proposed parking area on the south side will include native grasses around the perimeter and trees along the north to buffer the use from the road right-of-way and to also meet the landscaping requirements in the development regulations. The third item is traffic. New traffic pattern would be an entrance to the parking lot to the east of the existing church building. The new parking area would include handicap parking, parking spaces, and then trailhead parking spaces for Story County. Let's see. In 2015, the Iowa Department of Transportation Traffic Counts along 170th Street showed 120 vehicles as the average annual daily traffic count, and that's for between Interstate 35 and 563rd Avenue to the west. There's not anticipated to be much traffic increase to the site beyond what's currently there. The planned church functions in the proposed building will likely dictate any future increases above the existing church members. But the safety of motorists along 170th Street will improve with the parking being moved outside of the right-of-way to the north and then also to the south. In terms of use of the, let's see, something I failed to mention, I apologize. In terms of use of the structure, the use will be for church-related functions only. So it's not available for rent to the general public. It'll be used for church-related functions and organizations in connection with the church. Okay. Back to the parking and loading standard. With the goal of improving safety for church members and motorists along 170th Street, the Story County engineer did recommend against continuing to allow parking in the 170th Street right-of-way. So with the new parking, we think the safety of both church members and the general public will be improved. ADA compliant parking will be made available. In terms of signs and lighting, there's no additional signage planned at this time. LED parking lot lights will be installed, but they will need to meet the requirements of Chapter 88 of the Story County Land Development Regulations. Number six is environmental protection. The equivalent of 20% of the impervious surfaces added to the site is required to be installed as landscaping. And this is intended to provide maximum benefit to prevent soil erosion and stormwater runoff. The applicant...
Question?
Yeah.
So in this case, the impervious would be the buildings because it's gravel everywhere else?
Nope, the gravel is included. So anything that's being taken from its current
green state,
permeable state. We our land development regulations, our definition includes gravel as an impervious surface. Okay, so that includes all the gravel areas, the paved areas, and the building footprint. Yeah, that's a great question. So again, all landscaping requirements put forth in the land development regulations will be met. The applicant will be required to design the proposed buildings and site improvements in accordance with the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and SUDIS for erosion control. The applicant will work with Story County Environmental Health for the installation of the septic system. If the development impact is greater than 1 acre in size, a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit will be required from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. So if the board concludes that all of the above development criteria will be met, it must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that, if completed as proposed, there's a strong probability the development will. And number one is not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing or working in adjoining or surrounding property. Staff feels the proposed accessory structure will not impact health, safety, general welfare of those working recreating on or near the property. again, with the parking outside the right-of-way, we feel that the safety of members and public will be improved. Two, impair an adequate supply, including quality of light and air to surrounding properties. It's not anticipated that the proposed accessory structure will impair an adequate supply of light and air to surrounding properties. Three, unduly increase congestion in roads or the hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers. The proposed uses of the accessory structure will dictate future traffic levels to the site. We don't anticipate much increase in hazard from fire, flood, or other dangers because of the use. Four is diminish or impair established property values on adjoining or surrounding property. The Story County Assessor's Office has raised no concerns with the proposed development. Five is not being in accord with the intent, purpose, or spirit of the land development regulations or the county cornerstone to capstone plan. Staff feels that this proposed use is in accordance with the land development regulations, which permits churches in the A1 agricultural district through a conditional use permit granted by the Story County Board of Adjustment. The proposed use conforms with the future land use map, rural residential and natural resource area designations, as it's providing an access easement to Story County Conservation for public access to the conservation land to the north. The proposed parking area on the south side of the street is designated agricultural conservation. However, we believe that taking a small area out of agricultural production is okay given the increased safety of the inhabitants. So in terms of comments, last June we held a conceptual review meeting. During the review, concerns about the parking were raised. In April of this year, we met with Story County Development Planning and Development staff, and the Story County engineer met with the Pleasant Grove Church members to discuss finding additional space for parking outside of the right-of-way. And I won't go through all of these comments to share you, but we did send public notification letters to surrounding property owners within a quarter mile of the site on October 31st regarding this request, as well as we sent notification to the utilities and the power company, fire, and ambulance. The Nevada Fire Department did comment that the building would need to be inspected by their fire department for occupancy, and they would review the plans for compliance with the state fire code. So in terms of points to consider for the conditional use permit request, the addition of the accessory structure will allow Pleasant Grove Community Church to host normal church functions and provide needed amenities for church members without altering the historic state of the church building. The addition of on-site parking area decreases risk to motorists and church attendees by removing parking from the right-of-way. Public Grove Community Church has provided Story County Conservation access easement, which would allow the construction of public parking and allow access to the conservation property to the north. The proposed site plan has been approved by the Iowa National Heritage Foundation and Story County Conservation. So at their November 7th meeting, the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of the conditional use permit for Pleasant Grove Community Church as put forth in this application. With the following conditions. The use of the proposed accessory structure shall be for normal church functions only. The applicant must follow the conditional use permit completion standards identified in Chapter 90.05 of the Story County Land Development Regulations. The Planning and Development Department shall complete an interior inspection prior to the use of the building and parking areas. If applicable, a copy of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, the NPDES permit, should be submitted prior to the issuance of any development permits. So your alternatives are approval as submitted, approval with conditions, denial, or to remand the case back for the December 19th, 2018 Board of Adjustment meeting. I think I spoke to this, but there are approximately between 20 and 25 members, church members that attend church on a weekly basis. So. Any questions? Sorry.
What determines the NPDES whether it's the permit is applicable or not?
It has to do with the total size of the impact. They plan to do this in phases, so that would be a question for the state whether or not they would look at the whole project at once in terms of area, or if they would look at it separately.
And is this an expensive permit or just a basic permit?
I don't know about the cost.
And I'm assuming this has to do with the septic system, or the... Would it be
erosion control of stormwater?
It's a state requirement, so it's nothing that we can really have the power to waive.
All right. Any other questions from the board?
Yeah, so how do they get to the cemetery now?
I don't know that there's, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know that there's any written legal access.
Jerry Nelson's here.
I'm sorry, what?
Jerry Nelson.
Oh, Eric, if you could step up, sorry. Jerry Nelson has been the contact for the Pleasant Grove Community Church Board.
There really isn't a written agreement with the Milford Cemetery at all for access to the cemetery. Usually it comes through the land that the church owns, and it's right off the road. Right off the right-of-way, there's a gate right there, and then they actually go across the church property to the cemetery. And the cemetery is not, it's associated with the church, but the church does not own the cemetery. It was a private cemetery until about 2 years ago, and the Hughes family turned it over to the Milford Township. And that's who owns it now, is the Milford Township. We sold them a piece of property to the north there. I think it probably shows on your drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We sold that to them because the cemetery is full. So the only way to really get to that new parcel is off of the easement that we've agreed to with Story County Conservation to get to their, this kind of their trailhead to their property to the north. And then it kind of tees off on the north to a 20-foot easement to Milford Township from the Story County easement to the cemetery, to the addition.
So there is a trailhead kind of going north there now?
There will be, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Story County has already kind of cleared that off through there to get to their property.
So I'm assuming that you need to clear trees for the cemetery expansion as well?
Yes, yeah. And they have already done that. They've cleared the trees out, and they're starting to make improvements there so they can start using the cemetery. Like I said, it's out of room right now, so they anticipate using it as needed sooner than later, I would assume.
Okay. Any other questions from the board?
Is there an easement on the south side currently to get to McFarland Park?
No. I don't.
No. Yeah. McFarland Park is like a mile south of here.
Because that you can walk from McFarland Park right up to this.
Oh, I did not know
right
that.
Right along the interstate there.
Okay. Not on this property, no.
Okay.
Jerry, can you state your address?
I live at 1423 Linden Drive in Ames.
All right. Are there any other comments from the public regarding this case? Jerry, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
No, I think Emily is, Jerry has pretty well said it. We appreciate their cooperation. It's been a long process for us and for them, so we appreciate their cooperation on it, and we finally came into agreement on it. And
we appreciate Jerry's patience.
Hopefully we can move the project forward. So we'd like to get rid of the outhouse at some point in time.
Yes. All right. Well, then with that said, we will close our comments and discuss it as a board what action we want to take.
I would make a motion to accept the item number 2 under Board of Alternatives for Board of Adjustment.
With the conditions?
Yes.
As they're stated?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay. So we have a motion by Youngberg and a second by Matt to approve option 2. So roll call vote, please.
Neubauer.
Aye.
Fredke.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. Good. So our next item will be discussion and consideration of CUP 07-18, Inroads Mineral Extraction, Amelia.
Yes, so this is a conditional use permit application for mineral extraction, sand and gravel specifically. And, hold on, let me look at this here. Okay, so the property owner is Tanham Real Estate, and the applicant is Inroads LLC. The property is located on 560th, which is south of 30, and South Dayton Place in Ames. If you know kind of where they're building that new
flyover,
Menards.
Oh,
and then it's so that it's west of the flyover, and if you take the exit before the new Menards, you go south.
Okay.
Where the Hallett extraction pit is. You might have seen that at the corner there of 30 and 35. It's just south of the Hallett extraction pit. And so it's zoned A1 agricultural, and in that district you can do mineral extraction if you get a conditional use permit. There are a lot of supplemental standards, as I'm sure the applicant will tell you. So they have also submitted, in addition to their narrative and their site plan, boring logs to establish the character of the deposit, information on groundwater, so a hydrogeological study, archaeological studies, a restoration plan, and other information on how performance standards for mineral extraction, such as slopes of the bank of the pit, will be met. So the site in total is 47.24 net acres. You might be familiar with this site. It's where in 2017, I'm sorry, Matt, I don't think you were here for this one, but it was a temporary asphalt plant located on a gravel pad in the northwest corner. And then in 2018, just this summer, there was a borrow pit located there to get materials, dirt for the southbound lanes reconstruction project on Interstate 35. And so this is actually proposed to use both that gravel pad that was used for the asphalt plant. So if you look at the site plan here, again, that's in the northwestern corner. And then the existing pond labeled on the site plan is the existing borrow pit. So that is 4.6 acres approximately. So extraction is actually going to be limited just to that existing pond because that is where the archaeological study was limited to. You'd need to do an archaeological study on the full parcel to extract on the full parcel. And so in addition to being just limited to that 4.6 acre existing pond from borrow pit, it's also proposed to be limited just to stage one extraction, which would be extraction at a 40-foot depth phase two would require a dredge to go up to 80 feet, and we would need to have more borings submitted at that level and a hydrogeological study showing there would be no impacts on wells if you went to 80 feet before that could be approved. So this is just stage one. Again, an extraction to 40 feet over the course of 3 years, so until 2021.
How deep is it now?
That's a good question. Maybe 10 or 12 feet. So on your site plan, you'll see there are a few topsoil berms labeled to the south of where they will put a processing plant for the sand to wash the sand on that existing gravel pad, and then one to the west of the existing pond. They're also going to be using a flood control berm around that pond and the pit. And that's to protect groundwater from contamination from surface water runoff if there were to be a flood. It's pretty typical for the other extraction uses in the area, just because when you're going to such a deep depth, you know, there's more opportunity for groundwater contamination issues if surface runoff were to enter that pit. Stormwater control, kind of like the previous case you heard, an NPDES permit is required. However, this NPDES permit is a different type of that type of permit, specific to extraction uses, so they have effluent limitations on discharges. And then, additionally, they've submitted an erosion control plan. And that includes that all fuel sources will be double-walled and bermed. They are also required to get permits through the Iowa Mines and Minerals Bureau and the Mine Safety and Health Administration at the federal level. Proposed hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays and maybe a half day on Saturdays. A maximum of 3 employees would work on a shift. And then, let's see, what else? Regarding this restoration plan that you'll see on page 2 of 3 on your site plans, so for mineral extraction uses, you have to submit a restoration plan. So at the end life of the pit, you're required to restore it. So the applicant has proposed to do seeding and grading on the site, and as well as landscaping now on the berm on the west side of the pit, and this presents an opportunity to have established landscaping at the end of the use of this pit. So if you plant trees now, by the time you get around to restoring it, they'll be grown in. I think beyond this being required, in our C2C plan, we have it standard a goal to work when the Hallett mineral extraction pit to the north, that use ends, I think it's in 2035, to work with them to restore it and maybe do a conservation or recreation use on that site. So beyond just requiring a restoration plan, we are also looking to the future of this area and acknowledging that our future land use plans is this, that the pit to the north, the extraction pit to the north, when that land use ends, should be restored to maybe a recreation use, like Ada Hayden.
Nice question.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the property across on the east side of 35 has the conservation, and isn't that the property that we even made them buy a bond? We had a bond put out on that one.
Restoration.
For restoration.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, was there not a restoration requirement before they're coming in
mm-hmm.
on this?
Yep.
So now they're going to tear out any restoration stuff that's been done?
No.
Oh, it hasn't been done
it
yet?
It hasn't been done yet.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the overall goal with this site, we're really, you know, the request tonight is limited to the stage one, which is over 3 years.
Right.
But I think the applicant would eventually like to do stage two to a deeper depth and then maybe expand from the borrow pit once more studies have been done.
Okay.
So while you're looking at 3 years tonight,
long-term.
It might be longer
okay.
to come.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Also, I wanted to note about surrounding land use. I will try my best to describe this. The city of Ames, there's a parcel inside the city of Ames on the south side of Highway 30. It's the former truck stop site. The city has recently been working with that property owner to improve that site and encourage redevelopment. It's zoned highway-oriented commercial, so that's a similar zoning district to the hotels you might see across to the north of Highway 30. So again, when we're looking at the future land use of this area, you know, there could be more hotel uses in the future. This is just to the north in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, considered the Gateway Protection Area. So while this parcel isn't included in the Gateway Protection Area, just to the north, there might be stricter design standards, screening standards. So when we get into these standards of approval, we'll be talking a lot about screening and extra landscaping and that kind of thing. So,
did they make a comment on this one, the city of Ames?
No. We routed it to them. In a previous application on a parcel to the northeast where there's Manass is doing some C&D landfill operations, the city of Ames provided a letter that stated they'd been working with this property owner of the truck stop to do redevelopment. So that's where that comment came from. So on page 7 of the staff report, the conditional use permit analysis with the standards starts. So the first one is about compatibility. All adjacent parcels are in agricultural production except the parcel to the north, which is Talit Materials Ames South Pit, a similar mineral extraction use. This mineral extraction use that you're hearing tonight is proposed to last 3 years unless, you know, it's expanded or modified. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended limiting the permit just to this phase one, so over the next 3 years. Just because, again, the hydrogeological study was limited to this 40-foot depth, and so were the borings. And the site to the north, Talit Materials, is permitted until 2035. So this is a shorter time frame for now than that. On transition, we do have two berms proposed as shown on your site plan. There are no berms or landscaping proposed on the east side of the site, and the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend that as a condition to provide screening from Interstate 35. That condition is that it should be the extent of the pit, and it could be on the far east side of the site, just so you're not tearing out landscaping if the pit were to expand. But again, related to transition and change in this area, additional landscaping on the east side of the site was recommended as a condition. Regarding traffic, so traffic would come from the existing drive off 560th Avenue. Just to the south of this site, 560th Avenue dead ends. And so there is a farmer that currently uses this access still, but it's about 20 cars a day. And so it's also hard for the engineer to get their motor grader down that road. And so in previous conditional use permits with this same applicant, they've worked with the county engineer to maintain the road themselves. And so that's recommended as a condition. This use would create more traffic. You know, the applicant stated that any additional traffic might be shared with the use to the north. We're just becoming further south now, but that might be 70 cars a day. But again, they would work with the engineer to maintain that road.
So it's the same road that's used for Hallis, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's not paved, so I think at Hallis, it's Southeast 18th is paved up until their entrance, and then it goes to gravel once it goes south. There are 5 parking spaces proposed on site. Your site plan, if you take a look at that, there is a traffic flow shown. So they would go around, they would go counterclockwise to access the stockpiles of the materials that have been taken out. and then they will be using a loader. There won't be a scale house because the types of loaders they'll use will have scales in them. So there's no office or scale house. They can just load the material and determine how much was loaded at the stockpile. So it's a counterclockwise pattern. And again, the sand processing plant will be in the middle of that pad there as well to wash the material. No signs or lighting are proposed. And on environmental protection, they have submitted a hydrogeological study showing that under the assumption of a 40-foot extraction use, groundwater will not be affected. The study did recommend extra containment structures around fuels to prevent any spills that could turn into surface runoff that could get into the pit. But again, they will also have a flood control berm on the site, which is recommended as a condition to help prevent any surface runoff from getting into that pit. And there will be a floodplain permit required as well after the conditional use permit is approved. In terms of stormwater, the Iowa DNR regulates discharges and erosion control on this site. So moving on to the analysis section, which starts on page 10 of your staff report. If the board concludes that all of the development criteria will be met, it must recommend approval of the application unless you conclude that if completed as proposed, there is a strong probability the development will not adequately safeguard health, safety, welfare, impair adequate light and air, unduly congest roads, diminish property values in the area, or not be in accordance with the C2C plan. And we've covered a lot of the facts related to those standards, but just a few notes. The assessor raised no concerns with this permit regarding property values, and on our future land use plan, it is in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. It's designated as a natural area, but there is a policy to permit interim development to occur in a manner that will support long-term urbanization. So this is, again, gravel and sand construction. The applicant, Inroads, is a paving business, and they plan to use a lot of the sand and gravel as ingredients for their own production of asphalt and gravel. There aren't specific projects at this point, but they are a road construction business. And then additionally, the restoration plan submitted helps ensure that this proposal is in accordance with our C2C plan, which has a strategy to restore the Hallett materials extraction site to the north as a recreation use. So having, you know, established landscaping from the get-go in this case and making sure that there's landscaping on the east side of the site in addition to the west side of the site helps make sure that in the future, you know, a restoration happens that promotes the future use of, you know, a recreation use in that area. So moving on to comments, there will be an evacuation plan that's part of the floodplain permit that our emergency manager and floodplain manager will review. And then the engineer also noted, again, about working with the applicant to maintain the roadway themselves. We mailed notice on October 31st to surrounding property owners. We did receive one inquiry, but they didn't have a comment. It was just, you know, questions. It wasn't a support or deny. And then we routed this to Ames and Gilbert as well, but they did not have any comments. And so with that, we recommend approval with conditions. And the conditions are to limit the phase. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommends.
Yeah.
This was at their November 7th meeting. They recommend that the permit be limited to the first phase of extraction, which is over 3 years to a depth of 40 feet, that the extraction use ceases then by 2021, and the site be restored if no modifications to the conditional use permit are approved. Once restoration is completed, planning and development staff should do an inspection to make sure it's done in conformance with the restoration plan. That landscaping be installed by June 1st, 2020. That'll allow for settling of the berms before planting occurs. Berming and landscaping should also be completed on the east side of the site, matching the extent of extraction. landscaping shall also be inspected by the Planning and Development Department. Phase two of the extraction use shall not be approved until borings have been submitted to an 80-foot depth and a hydrogeological study has been shown that there will be no impacts from extraction at a depth of 80 feet. A flood control berm 1 foot above the 100-year base flood elevation level shall be constructed around the pit. A sufficient amount of topsoil shall be maintained on site to create the necessary berms for landscaping and to be respread during restoration. A bond is required, so a $30,000 restoration bond shall be submitted covering the cost of restoration and landscaping. Once landscaping is completed, the cost of the bond can be reduced just to $10,000 to cover just the cost of grading and seeding. Secondary containment structures are required around fuels and other chemicals, and a spill response plan should be maintained. A floodplain permit shall be obtained and an evacuation plan submitted. The applicant shall restore the road to its original condition, and the applicant shall water the gravel pad and roadway to prevent excess dust. So that would be alternative two, which is approval with conditions. Any questions? Yeah.
Who did the hydrogeological study? And I'm assuming it's an independent study.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe the applicant knows the name.
The name of the hydro.
Okay. It was a firm of Minnesota.
Okay.
It was recommended by Holden.
Okay. And then it says that, and I'm assuming the Board of Adjustment did its homework, because it says that the study was submitted on potential impacts to groundwater at 40 feet. Mm-hmm. Were there any potential impacts?
No, and it just suggested that you have secondary containment structures around.
Okay.
That
I just want to make sure there wasn't any minor.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
That was my question. Any other questions?
So is, if I understood you right, this isn't intended for any road construction?
It is. It's sand and gravel, and the main use is that, and the applicants can speak to this, is it's a road construction company, but they can use the materials for their own asphalt plants and production.
But they're also interested in selling material also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Joe Manette. I'm the manager of Inroads LLC. We're an asphalt paving company. Our headquarters is in Des Moines at 4224 Hubble Avenue. And I'm also the manager of Tanium Real Estate LLC, the landowner of this particular parcel. Inroads LLC is a asphalt paving company that is looking at using the material on this property as a raw material product that goes into asphalt paving. So that's the primary use for this site. But I can answer any other questions. I think one other question was, how deep is the hole currently?
Yeah.
Under the current conditional use permit for a borrow, they took dirt, just the overburden dirt off, and it, overburden is about 6 to 10 feet, depending on where. And that's what it is right now.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of material will you be getting this? Just sand or more?
So sand, gravel, and then you process it, screen it, size it, so you can meet the road construction specs for, you know, whatever. A deposit, you don't exactly know what percentage of products are going to come out of there, but you know it's sand and gravel.
Right.
So depending on what the source looks like and how we can process it, then we'll know what sellable products we have.
It's likely you'll have sand, pea gravel, 1 inch.
Exactly.
And
it should be exactly like the deposit that's just north of this site. And,
right.
And you know, that's something that plays into it as well, that there's a permit on two sides of this property for extracting sand and gravel. Mother Nature only puts sand and gravel where she decides to put it, and it happens to be right there. So according to our test borings, it's good sand and gravel. So there should be plenty of deposit there to produce sand, pea gravel, rock.
Is there an anticipated, I mean, will the general public be able to purchase from you?
I think that's more into the phase two that will become a commercial selling facility. We just don't have the resources right now to put up a scale house and sell to mom and pop people. We're just trying to sell to our business as a raw material or larger projects right now. But eventually, I see that as being our business, yes.
Any other questions?
I just have a question about this. Item number 10 here talks about the applicant shall restore the road to its original condition and maintain the road as necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understood, there is an individual who lives and uses this road and uses it very sparsely.
Mm-hmm. They don't live there, but they use it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. A farm or something that's down that way.
Yep. And I think that's been the arrangement with previous conditional use permits for the asphalt plant on the site.
Okay.
It worked out fine.
All right. Is your intent to, as long as the boring stays, there's more sand and more good stuff, to expand over time the footprint there of the pit?
Yes. The timing of this permit was in July is when it started. And there's crops out there, and we're going to time this so crops aren't out there. And it was going to be very, very expensive to do the entire site. So we had the dirt stripped off of this area already, and this is going to provide sand for at least 3 years. So we just limited it to that, and we're going to get all of our ducks in a row for stage two, deeper borings, archaeological study, everything we have to do to get the information for phase two.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
Is the Halix similar depth then too?
A Halix is more of a stage two depth. They use a dredge.
And 60 feet.
60 or 80 feet, yeah.
And apparently the depth that they're at isn't impacting the Nevada well or the Ames wells.
We routed this, you know, to Ames. I wasn't here when those permits were approved, so I don't recall what studies were submitted at that point.
I was just curious. I didn't know why you stop at this point and then you dredge to the next. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there something horizontally that obviously the Nevada well is the closest?
Mm-hmm. I think with the stages, this phase is done with an excavator, and so
we're limited to the 40 feet because of the type of equipment that we're going to use in phase one. Okay. Phase two requires a huge investment in equipment and the way you process it. Mm-hmm. So this was a little less expensive way of getting started. And we just limited the archaeological study and the water study, the well study, to those depths because that's all we're going to go in phase one. So we're going to get the studies renewed, reviewed, and they take into account what is next door, you know, that large water body and in the vicinity of where the wells are now. Maybe there's new wells from when that conditional use permit was approved. So it's a new study, and it'll take into account the whole area.
So will this area help provide material for the plant on Dayton currently?
A different company.
Which plant?
The Manats.
No. This is a different company. I'm a different applicant, and it's going to provide some competition, actually, in the area.
Any other questions?
When they go deeper, does the county require more than one study, a hydrogeological study?
It would just have to be a hydrogeological study that goes to that depth and covers that entire area.
But I mean, how does the county decipher what companies are reputable and what, you know what I'm saying, as far as there's a lot of people out there who do a lot of things that, you know, I'm just saying, once you go deeper or even just regular, why is it just one? Are they cost prohibitive, so we only ask for one? Is it do you get two studies when they go deeper to make sure that
This is just a question.
You know, I think our standards just require
one.
Yeah. But I do believe it was a professional engineer that completed.
Yeah, he's a hydrological engineer.
Oh, I'm not doubting. I'm not doubting the quality of the study. I'm just saying, as a member of the county,
sure.
Why is it just one study versus two? Mm-hmm. And it could be strictly. I don't. They may be so expensive that. If the county and you agree on the same company, then it's a...
But if the study's covering the area that they're proposing to do the extraction, why would we want two studies?
Just in case one company is smarter than the other. Bottom line.
Well, these are questions that we have, too, when we receive mm-hmm. materials.
Yeah.
We're asking those questions and reaching out to the applicants.
I think in every industry in this country, there are people who are good, and then there are people who are great, and then, you know, so I just...
Yeah, usually that information is from an Iowa licensed engineer okay. that provides that analysis, although I don't know if our rules specifically speak to that, but we would
just has nothing to do
that.
With this thing. I was just...
Yeah, none taken. I understand what you're saying, and maybe a list of references from the person maybe would help,
sure.
or if
right.
you know, if you wanted to help me with that.
A rating. Are they one of the top five rating?
Yeah, or
hydrogeological companies.
All them.
That many.
Oh, I bet they are out west.
This area.
And you could recommend that there's references provided when stage two is submitted mm-hmm. as a condition now, or you could do that as a condition with stage two.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
very, very important.
It is. That's why I'm asking.
Reviewed and analyzed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great discussion. Since you're at the podium, do you have any other comments you'd like to make?
Not at this time.
Okay. I would like to make a motion to accept alternative number 2 on CUP 10-18.
With the condition?
Oh,
with the condition.
Your public hearing?
Huh?
Your public
hearing. It's a CUP.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep. Sorry. So we need to open it up to the public then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public who would like to discuss or make some comments about this particular case? Okay. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing. And
now I'd like to make a motion to accept alternative number 2. Story County Board of Adjustment approves the conditional use permit for mineral extraction as put forth in case CUP 07-18 with conditions.
I will second the motion.
Okay, so we have a motion by Youngberg, and we have a second from Neubauer.
Mm-hmm.
Roll call vote, please.
Rick.
Aye.
Neubauer.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
Sir.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now we move on to the next page of our agenda.
It's the Chumlin CUP 09-18 and then this site plan.
Okay.
Okay, so this one is a conditional use permit for dog breeding. It's on a rural acreage located outside of McCallsburg. And the property owner, who is also the applicant and is here tonight, is Seth and Zadie Trumland. So this is located about 3/4 mile northeast of McCallsburg on 120th. So it's in Warren Township. They breed miniature huskies, so it's a cross of Siberian husky females and Pomeranian males. And I'm sorry that the screen isn't working tonight because there were photos and they're very cute.
Do you have one?
So the applicant could submit some to the record if they wanted to. The business was established in 2017. And so they came in for a zoning permit for a new structure, at which point we noted that a conditional use permit would be required. So that is what the request is tonight. So they have 6 Huskies and 4 Pomsies and 1 Pomeranian. There were 2 litters of puppies when they submitted the application, and the litters were total 9 puppies, and the applicant indicated that 14 adults is their personal maximum number. And so that's recommended as a condition as well. They could amend that with a modification to the CUP, but that's their personal max. So in addition to requiring a conditional use permit, in the Code of Ordinances, the Story County Animal Control Officer also has standards. Those include for air temperature and ventilation, adequate space for exercise, minimum levels of care, those types of standards. So we did wrap this to them. And then the Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship also licenses the business and does an annual inspection. And so they already have that license and provided that with their submittal. And they also provided veterinary records from all the dogs as well. So those were on the agenda center. No sales take place on the site. So because of safety concerns, not only for the dogs and the applicant, but also health concerns with folks bringing diseases from pets they might have at home onto the site, all sales take place, you know, off-site in a different location. The caretaking activities that occur daily include scooping the kennels and cleaning them twice a day. They do have a horse pasture just on the same property that they put the waste on. And weekly, there's a more thorough scrubbing of the kennels. There is tile and gravel around the kennel area that provides drainage, and they will be planting grasses in this area as well. So currently, there's 2 buildings used for dog breeding. There is a lean-to where the dog runs and kennels are located, and then there's a fully insulated 12 by 15 foot building for puppies. So the runs in the lean-to are each 5 foot by 10 foot and have weatherproof dog houses that match the existing buildings on the property. There's a total of 5 runs. And then there's a proposed new 20 by 40 foot building that's fully insulated, and so this will provide an area for the puppies. So the old building will no longer be used for puppies, and then it will also provide access from the runs so that the dogs can come in and out of the building into the runs. The building will have bat insulation in the walls and blow-in insulation in the ceiling. Let's look at the site plan for a minute. So where it says Y2, there's an arrow right by the dwelling. That's the existing puppy building. If you look to where more drawings are, just to the southeast of the dwelling, you can see there's an existing building, and then to the west of the existing building connecting is the new building. And so that existing building is where the kennels are located. You can see the landscaping that's proposed in this area as well. And so moving on to standards of approval, which begin on page 5 of your staff report. The buildings used for dog breeding are tinned. They're really similar to other agricultural buildings you'd see in the county. So there might be noise and odor impacts to surrounding properties, but all adjacent properties are large agricultural parcels. One does contain a dwelling. It is set back over 15,000 feet, though, from the buildings used for dogs, the dwelling. We, in our ordinance, require a 200-foot setback from property lines. They meet this. The 200-foot setback is from property lines with residences for this type of use. They're set back 400 feet from the property line that has a residence. And then a 50-foot setback is maintained by all buildings from other property lines that don't have residences, and this is also met. And then again, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend a maximum of 14, so that will help ensure compatibility. You know, if there ever was growth, they'd have to come back, apply to modify the permit, so that'll help with noise, odor, just general impacts as well. Regarding transition, again, there is one dwelling, but it is over 15,000 feet from the kennels. The applicant proposes to plant grasses as well around the lean-to and new building, and that will provide some more transition. Regarding traffic, parking, loading, signs, and lighting, there's no sales on the property, so it's just a normal traffic level of a residence, and no signs and lighting are proposed. For environmental protection, we're mainly looking at, you know, again, nuisance conditions that could be created, noise, odor, dust, that kind of thing. They did provide a plan to scoop the kennels and clean them twice a day, more thoroughly wash them once a week. You know, there's tile and gravel around the kennels that provide drainage. And there will be limited to a maximum number of 14 dogs. So if the board concludes that all of the above development criteria will be met, it must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that, if completed as proposed, there's a strong probability the development will, and these are those standards about safeguarding health, safety, and welfare, impairing light and air, congesting roads, diminishing property values, and not being in accordance with our future land use plan. The assessor's office raised no concerns. And this is designated as rural residential in the C2C plan. Principles for this area are ensure that new development is sensitive to the predominantly rural nature of the area and provide adequate buffers to minimize conflicts with agricultural uses. So again, the buildings used for dog breeding are similar to other buildings found on acreages in the county, pole barns. At least a 50-foot setback is maintained by all buildings from property lines. We've got a really large setback, a 400-foot setback from an adjacent parcel with a dwelling. So that exceeds our requirement of 200-foot setback from parcels with dwellings. And so that's, you know, the principle of maintaining adequate buffers and being sensitive to rural areas is met. We routed this for interagency review comments. Environmental Health just asked if wastewater generation would be in the new building, and the applicant said no. We routed these to property owners within a quarter mile as well and didn't receive any comments. And we also provided notice to McCallsburg, which didn't provide any comments. So just some points. So this is licensed, again, by IDLS, Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. There are separate standards in our code the animal control officer enforces for ventilation, temperature, welfare of animals. All adjacent properties, looking at more land use standards now, are large agricultural parcels. There is a dwelling to the northeast, but all required setbacks are met from these properties by the buildings that are used for this breeding purpose. No sales take place in the property. Kennels are scooped twice a day. The buildings are typical of pole barns found in the county. The new building will be insulated. There's adequate drainage around the kennel. And the Planning and Zoning Commission recommends the condition limiting the number of adult dogs to 14. So with the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation, that would be alternative 2 listed in the staff report. So approval with conditions and just the one condition of limiting it to 14. And the animal control officer with the county also has the authority under our code to do their own inspections as well.
And are those done on a regular basis, or is it just as...
The state inspections are done annually, but the county can do them as they see fit.
But is there a minimum? Like, do they have to, the county have to go out?
No, there's not a minimum with the county. There's just the minimum with the state.
Any questions for?
I have lots.
Well, and if there were issues in the neighborhood, the complaints from neighbors, you probably would have a lot more activity with the county animal control department being more active. So, I mean, it could be pretty frequently that they would be doing site visits.
Mm-hmm. I have several questions. Can you come to the podium?
Sure.
It's my wife, Zadie. We reside at 66902 120th Street in Colesburg, Iowa.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. First, I want to let you know that I have a lot of farm rural background, so I get it. But I also am very well versed on the puppy mill situation in Iowa. So hats off to you for making a better building for your breeding and stuff like that. And I'm not even sure, this is for my information on how I will vote, but it doesn't necessarily, what I'm going to ask or suggest doesn't mean you have to do it or anything, so that's the difference. But I'm curious, you have a running area. I mean, are these types of dogs that when, you know, you don't sell them right away, and those that you're breeding, do they have a place to run? Is that a state or... This is my ignorance on the state regulation. Does the state require you to have, a full play area or exercise area?
Per state regulations, I believe their size for kennels.
Okay.
But with our new building, we are setting aside in our horse pasture. We have to refence a portion of it, so basically the dogs can't get out.
Okay.
But we are going to put in a day run, so when we're home, we can let them out, run them, get them more exercise. They are a 5-foot by 10-foot kennel now, so it's a pretty good size for a dog. I don't know if it's even smaller for dogs, but that's just when we're gone that they're in those. And what was the other, for puppies that haven't been sold, we don't have any puppies that don't get sold. They all sell.
What's your female to male ratio?
For what we have?
Yeah.
It's the 6 females and then 2 males.
And then is that kind of where you're going to want to keep it? Or
correct, yes. What we have now, we're content with.
But you may go to 14?
Yeah, we just like that number. That's my personal limit. I don't want any more than that.
Okay. I'm a little perplexed by why you won't sell on site. I understand that there's the... concern for disease. I bought a pointing lab down in Knoxville, and he's truly a livestock. Kind of one of those things where he was very humane, but they're treated as livestock. They're not treated as pets, and I'm kind of getting the feeling this may be your situation too.
So I can go through in detail on why we don't allow visitation if you would like me to.
Well, let me go first.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm assuming, and I'm impressed that you're waiting to sell them until they're 8 weeks. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Are they vaccinated when they go out?
Absolutely.
So one of the main things you would be concerned with would be parvo.
That is correct, yes.
So if they're vaccinated and the mother actually passes on a lot of natural immunity for that, why would you not sell on site? Because to me, selling on site allows the public to view you, which in turn says a lot for you if you have a very reputable operation.
Yes, puppies aren't fully vaccinated until they're 16 weeks of age. They require a 4-set series,
right,
3 to 4 weeks apart. And so even if they get that first set of shots, it takes at least 3 weeks to set in. So
right,
they're still very susceptible to any of those, parvo, distemper, anything.
Well, parvo actually has a natural immunity from the mother until they're about 16 weeks, right?
It does, but they start weaning at 4 weeks. They're not constantly getting that immunity from the mom anymore. They cut it off at 4 weeks old.
Okay, so I'm just going to throw out here again, I think it's says a lot about your operation if you are willing to have the public come in and, you know, not necessarily go through your operation, you know, every room or anything, but to buy on site, and that may require a separate shed, you know, because obviously you wouldn't want to take them into where they're whelping, correct?
Mm-hmm. That is correct, yeah.
So is that a possibility?
So if you don't mind, I can kind of go through just in detail on why we don't allow visitors. So this is taken straight from our website. If you guys want to pull it up, you're more than welcome to read it too also. So home visitation is not allowed. Parvo is real. We are not a zoo. Allowing everyone and anyone to come into our home and visit not only puts our puppies at risk, but also puts our parent dogs, current puppies, and future litters at risk of dying and ruining our whole program. This is for the safety of our dogs and your puppy. Parvo, canine herpes virus, distemper, worms, kennel cough, canine influenza, lepto, and many other parasites, diseases can be tracked in on hands, feet, clothes, car tires, and outside dogs unknowingly.
All it takes is one sniff or lick from a puppy or dog in our program to be death sentence if they catch the terrible parvovirus and many other contractible illnesses you, your family, your family's pet could bring in without even knowing it. This exact scenario has happened to two very good friends of mine where they lost their whole 8-week-old litters due to someone tracking in parvo. This is simply not a risk we are willing to take. We have very strict cleaning and handling protocols for our dogs and puppies to assure they stay 100% healthy. Please understand this rule is set in place to protect the welfare of our dogs and your puppy. Along with the safety of our animals, this is also for the safety of our family. Sadly, the world is not what it used to be. People are actually posing as buyers just to come back and steal their dogs, rob them, and scary enough, breeders have lost their lives over this. Adding to this, another terrible person just ended up getting their dogs poisoned because the breeder would not sell them a certain puppy. There's links to all these online if you want to look at them yourself. We have had to install motion cameras on every single inch of our property because of situations that have happened along with seeing and hearing what is happening to other breeders. Please understand how important our safety is for our safety and our dogs. If you have any questions, please reach out. Again, you don't know this, but we have a very active online Facebook group, and that goes in. You can see how involved we are with updates showing you how puppies and parents are doing and kept and raised. We also post live videos, offer Skype and video chat with potential puppy buyers to help ease any worries that might be on their mind. We also have a ton of past buyers who will vouch for us and our dogs. As always, please contact you with any questions or willing to speak to us, as we do understand the importance of this role on the side of being a buyer and being a seller.
So if I want to purchase one, mm-hmm. you just meet, just pick a place.
So, again, all of our sales and everything is on Facebook. So we're very active on Facebook. We post daily on Facebook. And so I guess it's just kind of we're in a more of a mobile world than we were a while ago. You don't really post ads in the paper. You don't really, it's not really more or less personal basis. It's online. So if you contact me via email, I'll say, hey, go check out our Facebook page. That has everything you need on it. All the puppies we've ever had, all of our adults we have, they're all posted there. We do weekly live updates. We show the parents. We show where they live. They show the puppies. Everything you need to know is on that website. And so that's the first thing I'll direct you to do is go to the Facebook page. All your questions will be answered right there. If you want to pull it up, you can.
And I know you're not a puppy mill, so don't be offended.
No, I'm not.
That's the biggest thing.
Yeah,
about puppy mills is everybody sells them
online. We get that question all the time.
And they do not allow.
Completely.
Or, you know, they say, no, we're not going to, we'll meet you somewhere.
Yeah, and I personally, I like it when buyers question. They're like, well, why don't you have visitors? That's fine. I buy dogs, too. I would personally want to come to a breeder's home and look at it. But then again, look at the facts. Look at all the things that are happening.
What if they want to see the mother and the sire, do you offer to bring
yeah.
dog?
Actually, when I do sell puppies, I have the option if they want me to bring the parents with, I can. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
We met a family at the dog park.
Oh, yeah. Just recently, we met one of our past buyers at the dog park. They wanted some help training. Mm-hmm. So we do meetups with past buyers. Any questions they have? I just met somebody who just joined our waiting list. She'd never met a Pomsky in person. So I'm like, yes, I'll meet you at Lowe's, just a public place. I don't know these people, so it's just more for my protection and for dog protection. My dog is of age. He's 10 months old, so fully vaccinated. We met. They were happy to ask any questions, and then joined our waiting list. So that's just another person who didn't know us. They had their concerns. We helped ease their concerns that way.
So are the females never allowed off your property?
Depending on what do you mean?
Like, where do they?
We go to dog parks. We take them to Lowe's. They don't ever not leave. We go to Ada Hayden. We take dogs with us. We go to, what's the other, Hickory Grove for walks. So it's like they don't leave. They're fully vaccinated. They go with us.
Okay, so I know that we just talked about that, but if you're willing to take them off property, I know that the dogs are younger, but they are protected from the parvo.
Puppies don't leave. As long as they're over 16 weeks of age and they've had their full vaccination series, then I will take them to other people, let them smell them and introduce them. But if they're under 16 weeks of age, they do not leave at all.
Any other questions?
What do you do with your dogs when they're
done with their breeding? I know it said you give them to mm-hmm. you try to find good homes.
Yeah, we do. We pay for the stay and neuter. Everything's done. We've retired two females so far. Both of them have gone to buyers who have purchased their daughters. We get updates constantly. We're very strict.
And I know you said you've always sold your puppies, but what happens if you don't sell your puppies? Where would you deposit them?
We would keep them.
Okay.
Keep them until we find a home.
Okay.
And then that's also something else which I can touch on here. And I know I can see your case, but I want to help you understand us too.
Yeah.
No, and I get it.
Right.
I really do. So we have contracts with all of our puppies, and one of the big things is spay and neuter. So all of our puppies are sold on very strict spay and neuter contracts. They have to be fixed by 18 weeks or 18 months of age. They must send proof of a veterinarian. We have to see the site of the incision, and we have to be able to contact that veterinarian and make sure it's done. If not,
wow.
Yeah. If not, it is a contract. We can take them to court. Along with that, we also have a very strict rehoming provision in our contract. And I can go over this here real quick. This is, again, off our website. Keeping dogs out of shelters and in loving homes is extremely important to us. Making sure every puppy we raise stays in the best home possible is a commitment we make the day each puppy is born. With this, we do have a very strict rehoming clause in our contract that states if for any reason you can no longer keep your puppy you buy from us, you will contact us immediately and we will either assist you in finding your puppy a new home, or if you are in a bind and rush, and we will then take the puppy back ourselves and help find them a perfect home. We still keep in touch with every single puppy we have ever raised and make it a priority to continue to do that. These puppies are a lifetime commitment, and once we bring them into the world, we are bound to ensuring that that puppy stays warm and happy throughout his years. So we still keep in contact with every pup we have ever sold.
I'm sorry I'm giving you
No, please do.
It's a huge Iowa issue.
It is.
We're the third worst in the nation. We were stuck, and hey, we went down one.
And I agree. We do need to have a lot stricter rules for the regulations for Iowa. They are extremely lenient, and I'm totally pro.
The FDA is terrible.
Oh, completely. I'm totally pro getting those a lot more strict. Absolutely. Yes, completely.
No other questions?
No. One question. How large is the horse pasture
that you're
spreading
there? We've got 3.4 acres total. I would bet it's probably at least an acre.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we did ask Environmental Health specifically about that, and they didn't have any comments on it. So that was one of the questions the Planning and Zoning Commission had as well.
Yeah, given the number of dogs and how much would be generated and how much area would be spread on.
Fun math.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I can add a few more things just since I have here. Again, just some important stuff we have on our website. So some of the things, just some accreditation that we have ourselves. We are an
National Pompey Association member, a Pompey Owner Association member, Pompey Breeder Association founder, and an approved declassified breeder registration member. You can look up all these associations online and find their code of ethics and also work at a code of prosecution to be a part of those members. Also, some awards and accomplishments that we have from today. In 2016, one of our dogs, Pixie, won the PUA Pompey of the Year. In 2017, one of our dogs, Kratos, won the 2017 Pompey of the Year. We also had one of our dogs, Jade, placed third place in the 2017 Pompey of the Year. These are voted by anybody. You can just go on there and vote. We also won the 2018 Best Crossbreeding Show by the International Pompey Association with their homebred and raised dog, Raven. And we also won Best Infection with her for Pompey under 12 months of age. We have been quoted and published in the first and only book written by the Pompey Owners Association available on Amazon. And again, we are approved by the breeder member, the PBA founder, approved by the registry with breeder. We've had two passing service dogs bred by us, multiple therapy and emotional support dogs, worked for a variety of needs across the U.S. Another thing that a lot of people talk about is making sure you're breeding to improve the breed. And so for us, every single pair of dog that we breed is tested to be clear of over 150 to 180 genetic conditions. These tests run at a minimum of $200. Health and longevity in the breed is our number one goal. We will do everything possible to assure we achieve that with every puppy. We give the puppies one-on-one daily care, foster handling, socialization to ensure they are confident and loving adults. We raise them using puppy culture standards, early learning neurological stimulations from birth through 18. All health test results are available upon request, along with registration, papers, and DNA documentation.
Thank you.
She is not able to speak. Thank you. All right.
I'm sorry. And what is going to happen with the lean-tos?
That's where the kennel is located.
And right now, but once you move into the new kennel.
But then they'll connect.
Attached to it, so then the roof line will come into the side of the building now.
Okay.
And then we are looking at doggy doors, two full doggy doors. The dogs come in on the inside, and do what the dog houses for them. And, so they'll sell the full shelter, run through it.
And here you want to see, guys, let me show you real
quick. Oh, we've got pictures here.
Oh, good. So you call Raven and then Veronica,
oh,
you got
he didn't have here. Names, but he was showing me pictures of puppies.
Yeah, okay, perfect. I just want to show this is the one we, because the International Adoption Association, we're worldwide, goodness, working through the problem of the world, and going to be a dog in our world, and our dog wants 2018 as cross run show, so it's kind of a pretty good deal.
Yeah. How long have you been doing this?
Total for dog breeding. My parents raised dogs, so pretty much long.
And where did they raise them?
Not in Preston, Iowa.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Are there any other comments from the public regarding this particular case? Did I do something out of line?
No.
Yeah, it's a hearing, so okay. Comments from the general public.
Okay. Nobody? Okay.
Thank you.
All right. With that, we will close the public hearing, and we will deliberate.
Will there be inspections of the buildings once they're complete?
So they've done a preliminary inspection on the building.
Okay.
We'll do a final inspection once it's done. Yeah.
Okay.
But you could require our department, not probably not other departments, but our department to do like annual inspections. Sometimes that's something.
Okay.
If I'll wash my boots or something.
No, I think with the issue at hand, and it sounds like you guys are all about doing it right. But speaking for the county and speaking for the state problem, I would like to see, and I don't know where that gets made, but I would like to see that added on to one of the conditions that an annual county inspection would be required.
Mm-hmm. For the life of the use?
Yes.
We could make it into a field trip.
I'd love that. I love that.
So, Karen, are you making a motion?
I guess that comes down to, though, then what does the county inspection...
Right, and will the board want an update each time we do this?
But, I mean, as a starting point, what committee would be in charge of the inspection requirements?
Right, because the interior operation, that's probably... better suited for the animal control department than probably our department.
Okay.
Unless we were to work with them on this.
Okay. But then would there be a criteria, like obviously no cages on top of cages and, you know, the obviously veterinary.
That's what we call it in the state. The state is that as well as both departments at least once a year.
Okay.
So that's required.
Okay. So state covers a lot of that?
Yes, everything. So
they
we have pages and pages of protocols that we have to
We should require that they submit those results or those inspections. Yeah. And then they can update
for the state. USDA means nothing.
Yeah. So also, if they both have to show up unaccepted.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. Just
so
they're aware.
We
don't know.
Then also on page 3 of your staff report is the full list of standards that the animal control officer in our code of ordinances reviews. So air and temperature ventilation is adequate. Adequate space.
I'm sorry, where are we?
On page 3.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, it's not in the land development regulations. It's in, like, the animal control officer's
code. It's a separate
code.
Ordinance.
So there's 7 standards that they have enforcement over as well. So in addition, kennels are maintained so animal waste does not accumulate. Animals maintained so that noise from the kennel is not disturbing. Animals maintained with minimum levels of care. It references 2 other sections, and those are about, like, rabies. And the animal control officer has reasonable access for inspection, regardless of if they have a state or federal license.
And they can do that at any time.
I guess I would just like to add that there would be a county inspection.
So our department?
Does anybody have any input on that? Or?
Could we require that these... the results of these are submitted. Is there a pass? Not passed? How's that?
They're available online, actually. You can go to the college online website and they are. So then you can pull up all the expression. And then we get about one, two, three, and goes through everything in that comment library people. I have submitted them already. So.
And I'm sorry, I don't know what kind of rating our state gets as far as you know, the USDA department has a terrible rating on puppy, on dog breeding.
Yeah.
But I have no idea how our state fares. I mean, are they well respected? Are they okay? Are they just a little bit better than the USDA guys and gals that come to inspect? I guess I don't know anything about our, which is why I'm vacillating on this inspection issue. You know, certainly I would like to think our state is better than well, I know that it's got to be better. But is the state, I guess my question is, would our county be more due diligent in making sure that things were the way they should be versus our state regulations? That's my question. And that may be a headache.
And didn't you say, too, that your vet does an annual?
That's correct. That's what I was trying to ask. Probably do an inspection.
But they don't come in and inspect the premises.
Oh, the vets don't?
They do.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, because that's common inspection.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that.
That's okay. Yeah, they do pretty much the exact same stuff that the inspectors do, but it's more towards health of the dog.
Okay.
Everybody's up to date. Make sure puppies are good, clean, healthy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're part of it all, though.
I think it would probably be easier if we had them submit their reports from those two areas than for us to ask animal control to do an inspection.
Well, and it probably would be more appropriate for if the board wants to add that condition to have our staff do it and work with animal control department because they're the ones that have the expertise.
Right, right.
The operation.
And that's what I think I would like to see. How many dog breeders are there in our county? Mm-mm. Did anybody know?
I don't know that we actually, like all breeds?
Yeah. Just official breeding permits out there.
Do you guys know?
Mm-mm.
For yours.
I'm sure there's a lot more.
Well, this might be a good time to set precedent then for the county in that regard, just as another protection for the dogs.
So, for me, listening to your, I don't know how many people are breeding dogs that don't bring this to us, you know, I'm sure they're everywhere, so I have zero concern about the inspections that you're concerned about. I mean, because I am not going to be, I mean, I've raised livestock for 30 years, but not dogs. And, you know, I can physically look at it and go like, hey, you didn't, this looks nice.
No, well, I know. But that's why I'm very pleased with all their paperwork. But it is in Northwest Iowa, in Southern Iowa, we are ranked number 3 in the country for having the worst puppy mills in the nation. And as a lifelong resident of Iowa, and like I said, I have rural background, so I get it. But I also know that there's too many abuses out there, and I want to see you guys succeed and do well. But it's time. But the legislators, a lot of them, because they don't want to step on rural and farm animal issues, because it's all under one umbrella, and. I mean, if you're not aware of the puppy mill situation, the atrocities of stacks of puppy mills in northwest and southeast Iowa are horrible. So this is just a safeguard. I mean, we have all these regulations that we have now. I would just like to add that. I mean, I'm very, very satisfied, I think I would be, with the state and that thing. But here again, you know, half the problem with the USDA is that you got
people on the bribe, and they don't come when they're supposed to, and so it's just another check and balance for.
I think another thing with the USDA too, and also with the FLCA license, is they don't have a maximum number of dogs. So it's kind of nice for here, we set a limit.
Yes.
I think that's really important for you guys as well, just to know that we can't continue to expand.
But a lot of people do. This, you're doing this out of your honesty. We don't have any regulations that say you can only have 15 dogs. You're making that proposal to us, which is very good. But there's nothing that says you couldn't in 3 years have 30.
You have to come back for another conditional use permit.
That's my point.
It would be in violation of their conditional use permit if it gets approved.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I do believe.
Well, all the more reason for there to be an inspection then.
The animal control officer for the county has visited.
She
talked to?
Not Brenda.
Sue? She told me she did. Yeah. Maybe she visited. No? Okay.
Yeah, so if that's going to be an added condition, we're going to have to work with animal control.
But can I do it as a motion and just say we accept number two in with conditions including a county inspection requirement annually?
Yeah, you can keep it vague and then leave it up to us to work it out.
But is there a reporting mechanism so
the board would like a report from staff?
I would like to see if
at least for a couple of years.
Yeah,
maybe,
yeah.
The first
for
2 years.
2 years. Mm-hmm. Would you mind sending those two reports?
Absolutely.
And you're thinking like in do annual inspections for 2 years and see how that goes, and then assess from there, and whether or not you want to continue the inspections. Because I can tell you, if there's issues with neighbors, we will be involved. The county sheriff's department will be involved, and you know we're going to be looking at it very, very.
Animal control?
With noise.
Oh, yeah.
It's not so much about the noise. It's just about, and these folks obviously
care,
but it's so much because, and that's why I asked about do these dogs get out? Because if these dogs are mostly kept inside, very seldom will the neighbors ever see, you know, any, and I don't mean their dogs. I mean any breeder we permit.
Do you want to try to, like, for 2 years, require a county inspection, and then we
on
can assess,
or
the board can assess
yes.
on whether or not they would like continued inspections?
Yeah. And we can structure this in a manner with, so that they don't have to come back and do this again.
Right.
Make it vague enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't want to see more burden for you guys.
Right.
For you guys. You know.
There wouldn't be a burden if everybody did it right.
Right, and we'll put it on our calendar.
Yeah.
So you want me
we'll
to make
it.
A motion?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to make a motion that this board accepts CUP 10-18, number 2. Do you want me to read that?
It's 09.
09-18.
Yeah.
09, okay, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Okay, CUP 09-18 with conditions, including a county inspection for 2 years.
An annual inspection for the following.
An annual inspection following completion of the buildings for a 2 year period.
And also the maximum number of dogs permitted at 14.
Well, that's under that condition.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Do you have all that, Stephanie?
I do.
All right, great. So we have a motion by Youngberg. Do we have a second?
I have a second.
Okay. We have a second from Brecky. So we need a roll call vote.
Youngberg.
Yes.
Starwood.
Yes.
Brecky.
Yes.
Kimbauer.
Yes.
Motion carries. Good luck.
Thank you.
Do good.
Karen will be driving by.
California.
All right. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. It's your turn next.
Okay, my turn. Next up is discussion and consideration of CUP 10-18. And VAR 0518, and I'm sorry when I mispronounce your last name, Onken. Okay. Dog boarding.
Okay. It might be as rough as that one.
All right.
Okay.
Amelia?
So it's this site plan?
Oh, okay.
Oh,
on the graph paper?
No, that's okay. On the graph paper.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so this is Doggy Daycare and Boarding.
Oh,
and it is on Highway 210, just east of Slater. I had to think about directions in my head. 1.2 miles east. And so, you know, between the city limits of Slater and this property, it's a pretty high traffic area. It's about 2,990 cars a day. So while folks will be dropping off dogs, it's not noticeable increase. And it's a pretty good location just for traffic. So the name of the business is Dog District LLC. Again, it's dog daycare and boarding services. So boarding's like overnight extended. Maximum number of dogs is proposed is 15. And again, we worked with the applicant on determining that maximum. So the building is an existing building. It is 46 by 48 feet with an addition as well. This building is located 25 feet from the western property line. A 50-foot setback is required, so that's why there's a variance as part of this request. Back early this summer, the applicant and staff worked together to find properties that would work. They inquired about setback requirements. And then we also did, it's called a LISA evaluation, to determine the agricultural value of the property to make sure it's low enough to permit this kind of use. And so once all that had happened, they purchased the property. So they purchased the property specifically to be able to do this use. I think that's important for the variance case to know. And so they just moved in this year. And so there's also fencing that's proposed. There isn't existing fencing, so they're proposing fencing that would provide room for runs that connect to proposed kennels. Kennels are proposed on the south side of the building. Those kennels are only for the dog boarding use, though. There'd be an indoor and outdoor play area for the daycare. And the northernmost section of fencing, and you can see if you open up the site plan packet, there's a color picture, it's an aerial image, and the applicant sketched out roughly what the fencing would look like. So the northern portion facing Highway 210 would be a privacy fence, and then the rest of it would be chain link, 6 feet tall. It would match the proposed western setback of the building, so again, a 25-foot setback. And so the fence is also part of the variance request because a 50-foot setback is required. The other thing on the site plan that you will see is, or on this aerial image, is a parking area they sketched out just to the north of the fencing, and that's also shown in the second drawing here. The parking area is for three spaces. It's based on the square footage of the building, and staff reviewed it to make sure there'd be adequate aisle width for turning. And there's also landscaping proposed on the north and east side of the fence. You might see on the site plan on the second page sketched out. And then on the building layout, the first page, you can kind of see the addition on the north side of the building with the garage that the applicant will just be using for personal use. There's a door there for an entrance, and then there's a couple overhead doors as well. The south end of the building doesn't have insulation but will be insulated before kennels, as shown on the site plan, are installed for the dogs to be boarded. Let's see. So again, a license is required through IDOLS or the USDA for this use. Those requirements in the Story County Code for the Animal Control Officer about ventilation, air, waste apply, again in this case. Caretaking activities include supervising the dogs and then composting the waste. They will be following USDA guidelines for composting prior to spreading the waste, and the waste will be spread on a friend's farm field. So the surrounding land use, there is a single family dwelling to the north, but a 200-foot setback is met from the building and fencing. The other properties surrounding are all just large agricultural parcels in row crops. They're all zoned A1 agricultural, but they are all over 35 acres, so they are all buildable for dwellings. If somebody came in and submitted a zoning permit, we'd be able to approve that. And then there is another nearby dwelling that's approximately 460 feet to the east of the building where the boarding will be located, but that is not an adjacent parcel. Kind of looking at the corridor between this parcel and the city of Slater, there are some dwellings, 10. Not a whole lot of them are newer, and so a lot of them are just, you know, historic farmsteads. In our comprehensive plan, this area is designated as agricultural conservation, few rural residential areas where those existing dwellings are located. Slater doesn't have a designated urban growth area in our comprehensive plan like a lot of the other cities do, showing where future residential growth or industrial growth might happen. However, there was an annexation on the other side of the city, the northwest side, in 2016. They annexed Syngenta. And then they also annexed a few fields that may be developed residentially, but again, that's on the northwest side of the city and mostly in Boone County.
This is about a little over a mile east, then? Mile and a quarter, maybe?
East, just on Highway 210.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So looking at the standards of approval for the conditional use permit, starting on page 6 of the staff report, compatibility. Again, this is an existing pole barn structure, so pretty similar of what you'd find in an acreage in the county. It does meet the required 10-foot setback for accessory structures. If a conditional use didn't occupy the structure, for conditional uses, that 50-foot setback is required. But because it was built before this conditional use was proposed, it has a 25-foot setback and exceeds the required 10-foot, but now it is required. The south end of the building is the only end that is not insulated. The applicant proposes to insulate this area, and it's recommended as a condition prior to boarding dogs in those kennels that will be constructed on the south end. There is a single-family dwelling across Highway 210, but the required 200-foot setback from that property line is met, and the commission did recommend a maximum of 15 dogs as a limit. Regarding transition, some of the same facts here regarding setbacks from dwellings. Again, a 50-foot setback is required from other property lines, and that isn't met from the west property line. Landscaping is proposed on the north and east side of the fence that's proposed. And then again, staff just noted in this section, the proximity to the city of Slater, 1.2 miles away. And then the commission did recommend a condition that the fenced area meet the required 50-foot setback. And that fenced area is still is a variance request as well, but that was a recommendation. And then on traffic, parking, loading, and signs, so there will be visitors to the site, so they are required to comply with ADA standards for parking and provide an ADA stall. We also, again, reviewed the aisle width to ensure there'd be adequate turning, and this is located with access on Highway 210. No loading areas are proposed. The parking area is located south of the dwelling, and so it's kind of screened. It's set back farther from the road. There's no signs and lighting proposed. Regarding environmental protection, the applicant has submitted information on USDA guidelines for composting waste. The dogs will have supervision and controlling barking and a privacy fence for the outdoor area on the northernmost section by the parking lot and closest to Highway 210. The south end of the building will be insulated prior to boarding dogs. And then looking at the analysis section, staff also noted that Highway 210 is a pretty high traffic area, so there won't be any really impacts on congestion. Story County Assessor's Office raised no concerns. And then looking at our future land use map designations, policies for the future land use of the area include ensuring development is sensitive to the predominantly rural nature of the area and minimizing conflicts with agricultural uses by providing adequate buffers. And so while the buildings used for the dog daycare and boarding are similar to others you might find in the area, a 50-foot setback from all non-residential property lines does apply. And so that's why there's a variance requested, but also the commission recommended that the fence meet the 50-foot setback to make sure there's an adequate buffer. Moving on to the variance request. So that starts on page 11?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The principle of reasonable return is the first principle. So this asks the board to consider if, without the variance, a property owner cannot establish any beneficial use of their property. So typically, we'd say there's a dwelling located on this property. To have a dwelling located on the property, you don't need a variance. This standard isn't met. However, you know, I think it's worth noting that just in the case of the building, they did purchase this property specifically for this use. Without the variance for the building, the applicant has indicated they will need to sell the property and find a different location. Building another building is not economically feasible. Thanks. And so for the variance request, for the 25-foot variance to the required 50-foot setback for the building, staff concludes that you can conclude this standard for reasonable return is met. Additionally, for the variance request for the fence isn't an existing structure like the building. I think there's definitely a preference to have the fence configured in the way it's proposed because the kennels are currently proposed to be on the south side of the building. And so when you have a fence that extends the full extent of the south side of the building, you maximize the amount of runs off the kennels that you can have. Part of what staff reviews, though, with variance requests is, are there alternatives? And so, yes, the fence could be reconfigured to shift to the east to meet the setback, and not offset a lot of the and it would offset a lot of the outdoor area lost if you met the setback. However, the amount of kennels would really be reduced that you could have that have outdoor runs attached to them. If the fence met the 25 or the 50 foot setback, it might be reduced from like 8 to 2. Staff thought that there are several overhead doors on the east side of the structure. Perhaps one of those could be walled off to put kennels there instead to have the runs off the east side of the building. But I think the staff's main conclusion is that the fence could be reconfigured and the daycare use would not really be impacted in the amount of space that they would have if it was expanded just to the east. Really, the issue with the fence is just the boarding use and having kennels for boarding that are on the south side of the building and connect. And so not all use of the property as a dog boarding or breeding use is taken away if you don't grant the variance for the fence. You can still have dog daycare with a fence expanded to the east that met setbacks. And so staff concluded that the standard of reasonable return is not met for the variance request for the fence. The next standard is that the plight of the owner is due to unique circumstances. I'll try to keep it shorter on this one. But the proposed reuse of the building is a unique circumstance. This building was built to meet setback requirements in the A1 agricultural district just for an accessory structure. That's a 10-foot required setback. It exceeds that. It's at 25 feet. However, in reusing this building for this conditional use, a greater setback is required. And so that is a unique circumstance. However, the fence, again, is proposed. It could be reconfigured.
regarding the third standard, that the use will not alter the essential character of the locality. Again, it's typical in the A1 district to have accessory structures meet a 10-foot setback. That's not out of character for the locality. This one has a 25-foot setback. However, because there's a greater potential for noise impact from conditional uses, especially like a dog boarding use, that's why we have a 50-foot setback required for this use. Staff concludes that they are insulating the south end of the building. And they did contact the neighbor to the west, and the applicant also provided a letter from a property owner who lives near another dog boarding use in the county that stated they weren't bothered by occasional barking. And so just for the building, because it's insulated, it's indoors, you can conclude that the standard's met. But for the fencing, it's an outdoor area. There might be more concerns with barking and noise. And so staff concludes that the standard that the variance will not alter the essential character of locality is not met for the proposed fencing. Granting the variance will not be contrary to the public interest is the fourth standard. Setbacks are enforce the public interest of reducing noise and odor and nuisance condition and protecting the character of the area. This is similar to the previous one in that the building meets typical setbacks for accessory structures, is similar in character to other buildings in the area, and will be insulated, so it's not contrary to the public interest. But again, given that the fence will be used as an outdoor area for dogs, a reduced setback may not be in the public interest with potential noise impacts. No landscaping is proposed on the west side of the fence either. And again, while it is currently in row crop production, it does exceed our minimum size requirement for the construction of a dwelling. So a dwelling could be constructed on the property in the future. And we are about 1.2 miles from Slater, so near an urban area on a major corridor. I'm just thinking about future growth of the area. Finally, the spirit and intent of the Storey County Development Plan and Storey County Land Development Regulations are protected. So the statement of intent for conditional uses is that many land uses are not inherently inconsistent with other permitted uses in a particular district, but they may have significant impacts on surrounding areas. And so the point of the conditional use permit process is to encourage compatibility of proposed development. And so this kind of also relates to our C2C plan principles of ensuring development sensitive to rural areas and that there's adequate buffers with agricultural uses. And so with the building, given that it meets setbacks for accessory structures otherwise, we've concluded that the standards met, the reduced setback for the fence, again, would create greater issues with noise. And so in enforcing the required 50-foot setback for conditional uses for the fence, the spirit and intent of the land development regulations and C2C plan are met, given that we're safeguarding against potential future impacts. So we routed these proposals to the interagency review team. Environmental Health just noted the need for a future septic system if a bathroom was added in the building. We did route this to property owners within a quarter mile twice, so on the 31st and the 14th. The 14th was for the variance and the CUP, and the 31st was for the CUP, and no comments have been received. And we routed this to Slater as well, and no comments were received. So the Planning and Zoning Commission only makes recommendations on conditional use permits, so they recommended approval with conditions at their November 7th meeting. They did have a lot of questions on the condition that the fence meet the required 50-foot setback. They mainly wanted more information on how having the kennels on the south side of the building and connect to runs was essential to the dog boarding use. However, they did end up including that condition in their recommendation to you all. Other conditions include that appropriate licensing from the state or if USDA is obtained, the south end of the building is insulated prior to boarding dogs, the maximum number permitted is 15, and a variance is obtained for the building
And that proof of compliance with the first two conditions about licensing and insulating the building be provided to the Planning and Development Department. So that would be alternative two, approval with conditions of the CUP. Staff recommends alternative one for the variance request for the building, approval. So that's a variance request of 25 feet to a required 50-foot setback. And we do recommend denial of the variance request for the fence, and that, again, is a 25-foot variance request to the required 50-foot setback. Any questions for staff? Yeah, the commission might have questions for me and then you.
Okay.
It's up to them.
Any questions, board, for Amelia?
Of the requirements is when the recommendation on the last not approving the fence variance, which of these is the big hurdle that staff saw?
I think the main consideration when you look at a variance request is if there is an alternative way to reconfigure your proposed building or structure to not meet the variance, and you can in this case. Just because you could expand the fenced area just to provide more outdoor area for the dogs that are at the daycare to the east. Even if you didn't reconfigure the kennels, you to have outdoor area to the south, you might just not have connected runs to the kennels. But you could still do the dog daycare use with an outdoor area.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? No?
I'd like to hear from them.
Yes. And just please state your name and your address.
My name is Molly Onkin, and I live at 524-0582-10. So one of the big things with the whole fencing thing that we kind of keep going back to business is that the way that the building is set up is that there's the garage at the end that's not insulated, which I'm going to like completely finish, the kennels will go in there and everything. The reason why mostly, yes, the fence would meet the 25-foot variance would be, one, it would just make like a million times easier because I wouldn't have to only put a couple runs in and then not have runs in the other one. You know, so it's kind of like either I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. You know what I mean? If I'm going to rip the side of the building apart and put a bunch of runs and stuff. Also, I had the fencing. I think I got a couple quotes from a local guy who lives in Cambridge who's going to do my fencing. I got him to come back out and measure the 15-foot variance. Another reason why I was trying to keep it as far over towards the building is because my property kind of slowly has a little bit of a dip. So I tend to have a lot of, you know, water tends to, you know, when it rains and so on and so forth. So I'm also trying to keep the people who are coming into my business from taking home mud-covered dogs every day as well. You know what I mean? Because if I move it 25 feet the opposite direction, I'm putting them in this huge area that, to me, I would have to find a way to adjust the ground, whether I have to add rock over there or whatever I might have to do in order to make that property in that area, which I was kind of hoping I wouldn't have the fence on, you know, more exploring. The issue is made to me letting the dogs go out and be able to freely run out there and not have to worry about them coming back wet or covered in mud, or even just the quality of my property being ruined as, you know, I'm allowing the frost. So as I enter the 25 feet that, you know, they're wanting to go away, it just kind of puts this huge fence in the middle of my property versus, you know what I mean, kind of allowing myself to add the runs into the kennels, which my girlfriend owns a doggy daycare, and she's like, the dogs don't even like the runs. You know what I mean? Like, most dogs don't want to go out there, and they want to go and play and do everything with all the rest of the dogs. So I totally get it. But I guess my thing is I just am unsure why, you know what I mean, we have to take away that part of the property for what may happen to the 35 acres of farmland. You know what I mean? So far down the road.
And I have a question too, because when we came to planning and zoning, it was not my opinion that they were opposed to the variance. They asked a lot of questions about it. Mm-hmm. And I went to look on the notes from the meeting after I looked at the agenda for the day, mm-hmm. and the notes weren't available. But it is my opinion that they, even though they said they could, planning and zoning, I mean, the board of adjustments can address the variance. And they really didn't say, we don't think you should be able to do that. So I was kind of taken aback by that. I don't feel like they necessarily had an opinion against it. They just wanted to know why. And that's why I said that I proposed to come to you where the kennels would be taking out that overhead door and moving it changes the whole dynamic. And it's not something that's going to work. And I'm kind of appalled. If someone's going to do that, she wants to be a good neighbor. She will never do anything to hinder that with that 25-foot fence. There was a fence there that was, in fact, an additional 10 feet beyond where she wants to put it for livestock that we took down. You know, if that had been there, we'd be able to then follow that. So I just don't see the benefit of it. Mm-hmm. Something else I want to clarify, too, is when we talked about the doggy daycare and the dog warden. There can be 15, according to regulations, there can be 15 dogs in doggy daycare with one person. And then there may be additional dogs that are there for boarding that aren't covered by doggy daycare. So there's a chance that there's going to be more dogs than 15 dogs on the property because of the turnover of the dogs.
Okay.
Which we addressed at planning and zoning, too.
That wasn't clear at planning and zoning, so that will need to be an amended condition if there's more.
So I want to talk a little bit about Baldwin first. We kind of talked about we talked about the dogs and the condition that they're going to have. Molly just moved back here from Baltimore, Maryland, so she was a hairstylist in the city. And she brought this property in Slater because she had the dog that she didn't think was getting enough love and attention, and so she bought a farm for her dog. I'm not kidding.
I don't like to admit it to a lot of people, but
I do the same thing.
I remind her that every single time when we first bought it, and I had to walk her along the property with a leash because she had never went to the bathroom without a leash before. And I was like, if anybody sees me out here doing
that, would be
I'm going to be mortified.
And so her doing this is, you know, her making a big commitment because she feels like that's what dogs need. You know, she moved to downtown Des Moines when she moved back there. She was mom, this is where I belong. And so her dog's very happy out in the farm. She's dirty and she runs and she's crazy. But I have another daughter, and I promise you that Molly's doggy daycare is going to be cleaner than my other daughter's home.
Maybe a my little sister's bedroom with everybody lives at.
And so, you know, I guess, you know, like when you were talking about, Karen, when you were talking about the inspections and how the dogs are going to be treated, we kind of had the same concerns because their dogs are outside. And yet, you know, we want to do this. Honestly, it would be the Taj Mahal of doggy daycares because she's so particular about it. And I just don't feel like that 25-foot or anything that she does to her property is going to hinder the area. That we weren't going to landscape on the west side of where the fence is. If that's a requirement to get us to that 25-foot fence, we will plant as many trees.
I'll plant whatever you guys want me to
plant. And again, the 15, sometimes people bring in older dogs or small dogs that can't be in the daycare they want to order. And then stuff about the addition unit. If people bring their dogs to be boarded and also doggy daycare, it will count. But there might be some, like a Yorkie or an older dog that is in a kennel that's not going to be part of the daycare.
Mm-hmm.
So there will actually be 17 dogs on site, 15 that are eligible to be in the daycare.
Mm-hmm.
Because those have, at the owner's request, they will.
So it's 17 the proposed maximum then?
No,
you have
no, no, she's just giving you an example.
She's bringing
okay.
in the dogs from boarding. So, like, one of my really great friends, she was at the other meeting, and she stood up and spoke. She's amazing. She runs an amazing doggy daycare. It's local. And she does that. You know, she has her dogs in her daycare, which she books every single day. I even take my own dog there. And, you know, she books every single day. She turns people down. She's already like, Mom, hurry up. Because I have a list of people who want you. Because she lives in Nevada. I live in, you know what I mean, like, Slater. It's super easy to get to Ames and everything. Like, I mean, I drive my dog from Slater to Nevada to go to her dog's daycare, and I don't even have a job. Like, I just sit inside my house and do nothing and just know that my dog's being taken care of. So, I mean, she has 10, 15 dogs. If she has somebody who comes to board and they want their dog to be in daycare all day, then she takes away one of the numbers and she has those dogs in daycare all day. So, I mean, the number quality of it is that by law, I can have 15 dogs in my doggy daycare that would actually be, you know, I say 13 or 14 because, of course, my dog is going to feel whatever she wants to, and if she doesn't want to, she can go to the house. But, you know, I can have those 15 dogs in my doggy daycare playing, and then I can have, by law, I can have 15 dogs in kennels, you know what I mean, in the next room if that's what I choose to do. That's not the kind of show I'm going to run because I wouldn't want my dogs to be in a kennel all day while listening to all these dogs fight for, you know what I mean, 8, 9, 10 hours a day. So that's not my goal isn't to have 15 dogs all day shut in kennels. And then, you know, what I could do is I could have the 15 dogs in the doggy daycare room inside, and then I can let the 15 dogs out from boarding into the pasture to play in the fence that I'm putting in there. They can play for 45 minutes to an hour. I can still have the dogs in the daycare facility. And this is all the law. I'm just using this as an example. But I can have them outside of the pasture playing for an hour and still have my 15 dogs as long as they're not all in the same room together at the same time by law as one person. So she can work for me, she can work in the daycare, have her 15 dogs. I can have 14 of my 15 dogs. And we're not breaking any law, nothing. You know what I mean?
So educate me about doggy daycare a little bit.
Pretty much, I really just want, I'm going to have these amazing people who, like I said, I already have a list of people who are wanting to bring their animals to me. I have this big garage, I guess, one of the tractor in it, or
a mobile
or something. Yeah, it's all concrete, it's got floor drainage. I mean, this building is immaculate. I mean, I'm just going to have dogs, and they're just going to play all day. I have a concrete slab that comes out that I'm going to have. It's probably version of that. What I'll have is I'll be able to open the garage, and they'll be able to come to the concrete. And in case it's just really gross weather, and I don't want them out playing the grass beach area. I'm actually having the concrete area and the gravel fenced off. So they'll still have outdoor space if they, you know, need to go to the bathroom and do all that stuff. But they won't have free reign to, you know, you need all the grass and everything. So pretty much I'm just, you know, I'm a place for you to take your dogs when you want to have your garbage cleaned or your company over or you go to work all day and you want to, you know, you need a
function. So daycare is more of an ongoing
day, like people who work and want their
dog. They don't want their dog in a kennel or whatnot.
They don't want their dog all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like I drop my dog off at 7:15, 7:30 in the morning. She plays all day long. I get amazing videos. I get all this stuff. I pay and then, you know, I leave her before then. But, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock, whenever the daycare closes, people come and pick their animals.
And a separate component of this is you also want to be able to
kennel
bolt forward.
I have a question. So before we do anything, does this have to then go back? Because it does say proposed is 15, and that 15 does not include the kennel. So does this all have to go back to that?
To Planning and Zoning Commission?
Yeah.
No, but I will say their recommendation to you found that with a clear maximum on the number of dogs, that's how the standards for compatibility and environmental protection were met. So if you take away
that's
a clear maximum
question.
Number, then you'd have to come up with other reasoning that's listed in the staff report and Planning and Zoning Commission came up with to grant the conditional use permit. So you could change the number.
Oh.
But if you got rid of it, you're going to have to come up with other reasoning than is in the staff report tonight, and we'd have to write it down.
But then don't you have to take that back and research?
No,
that?
They just make a recommendation.
Okay.
So you could change the number, but if you get rid of it completely, you're going to have to rewrite the standards that are listed.
Basically, you're asking
report.
Us to say the number, maximum number of dogs proposed for daycare is 15 with an additional...
So you could do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a maximum for both and then have a total.
We would have to add that caveat, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I do plan on doing the daycare. I mean, for a while, I took a huge leap and my being dropped in Baltimore, so I moved back here. So my goal is to do the daycare for however long it takes for me to be able to finish the other garage and get all the kennels up and stuff. So my initial idea is to start with daycare for however long I have to do the daycare in order to get the kennels built and, you know what I mean, everything up to code and inspection for all of it in the other garage that's not finished, where the kennels and everything is done.
I believe there's 8 proposed kennels along the wall, mm-hmm. not in that garage. So for all practical purposes, 40 would be those 8 kennels, unless someone brings 2 dogs that they want to keep together.
Mm-hmm. Right. So then you brought up something that I don't think was covered by staff, was that there was an existing fence that actually had only a 15-foot setback. Would that be the right number?
Or it's a livestock fence?
It wasn't even 15.
Yeah.
So it's like exempt from zoning?
So it's exempt from zoning?
Yeah. Was it used for, was there horses or cattle?
Yeah, there was,
so it would be exempt.
They have livestock there.
Okay, so...
It was right up to the property line.
Yeah.
It was
this kind of this appears to me to be kind of like
when
we're talking.
And cows don't bark.
I can eat, so like, if you come across the street from me, I go over and have coffee with Norma often. She's 85 years old. She lived in my house 65 years ago. So she has this huge connection with my mom. So she could not be happier that a single female bought this house. You know, it's been mostly all single men. No offense if you guys are single men. But, you know, I mean, it's been... There, when I bought this house, it's literally, I don't know if you guys have ever driven by it, but it is literally like a box in the middle of grass.
Mm-hmm.
One of the improvements to my property was to tear out all of the landscaping. So I have no landscaping. I don't even have a walkway to my front door. I mean, like, everything is gone. So my house is literally, it's a cute box, but it's a box sitting in the middle of my property with a garage that's twice the size of my cute box in the house. But, I mean... Norma and Warren, the people who live across the street, they couldn't make it here that day or whatever, but they have absolutely no problem with this. They're like, oh, we don't have a problem with it at all, because they've seen the improvements and how much I've taken care of my property just in the few short months that I've lived there. You know, I've planted the plants, I've cleaned up the disgusting manure-filled pasture, I've, you know, cleaned out trees. I mean, I have one tree and you couldn't even see halfway up it because the overgrowth of just weeds and stuff was just, I mean, the way the house has changed in just like a few short months, I mean, it's
okay.
more than we have.
And it's her home, you know, it's not just a business, I mean, her home.
We're faced with the technicality, so this is what I want to ask the board. Is this somewhat comparable to, remember the home that had the porch that didn't have the proper setback?
Right.
But because it had already been established and there was no comment about it. It was only because when they came up with wanting to change something that it came to the attention of the county.
No.
That was constructed without a permit.
Those were constructed without
right,
a permit.
Right. But, I mean, it wasn't their fault. They bought it after that, right?
No.
They had it, but they didn't. Yeah. But that was back in, like, 1970-something, wasn't it?
2011.
Oh, okay. All right. It was a long story.
Yeah.
But my point is, what you're asking us is to not allow the 50-foot setback and make it 25, even though there was originally a fence there at 15. And how far was their property to the west?
It's a 25-foot setback.
Yes, that you would like.
Right, so
versus the 50.
Yeah, there's a 50-foot requirement for the buildings and outdoor runs. So.
But
yeah, and so with the fence that was there before.
Right.
Agriculture, livestock is exempt from zoning in state code. So if there was a setback that we would like to enforce, we couldn't even do that. So it's not really an apples-to-apples comparison because we cannot enforce a setback on a livestock fence. Right. It's completely
different. I know it isn't technically, but I'm looking at it as a land use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and part of what we're doing here is looking into the future. As Amelia said, there's 10 existing dwellings along 210 from Slayer to this property.
Mm-hmm.
Likely, you'll
see
more.
There'll be more.
There's quite a bit of traffic. The property to the west would accommodate a single-family dwelling. They could potentially construct that dwelling 10 feet from that common property line. I don't know if they would, but they certainly could.
Mm-hmm.
And it will not always be a agricultural
right.
row crop field.
Mm-hmm.
The land use will change, and once this use is established, it's established. So we're trying to look ahead into the future and try to address things that, since they're the ones that would be constructing the fence, you know, what would be reasonable in looking to the future.
And I guess, the applicant brings up the point of the wet area. Staff is just trying to offer options in expanding the fence to the east. You could just bring it in 25 feet and not extend it to the east, and that would only be, 3,000 square feet removed from the outdoor fenced area, when in total, the fence is proposed as, 13,000 square feet or so. It's a pretty large area.
But the reason why I bought this property is to use it for the outdoor space to have these dogs run. So even if I continue with my
exploration,
I'm just not utilizing the space. And the reason why I bought this amazing property,
I guess we can say what if. If something happened and someone decided to move there, and they're like, we don't like this, we'd like you to move it, then it could have been really taken. But right now, we're dealing with combines coming down the road, on the fence line at 10 feet, and that's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And dogs are not noisy. It's not going to be an odor issue. I don't believe it's going to be an odor issue. So I think we're saying in 20 years, if someone wants to build a house there, this could be an issue. In the meantime, it depends the land use today.
Mm-hmm.
Would be my argument.
Is there a precedent to say, approve a variance with a condition that if a neighboring property is developed, it has to be reapproved or something like that?
That's what I'm wondering.
You could do that, but I don't know how it would
work.
Yeah, define developed.
Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to note, with the future land use, that's not just a what if, it's a standard for approval that we have to look at. So we'd need to come up with an alternative finding than staff gave you on that last part of the variance on for the fence. You'd have to come up with an alternative finding that it wouldn't be contrary to our future land use plan.
I think I can get comfortable somewhat about financial hardship, and the reason I say that is you're going to be limited in a couple of ways with only two runs. That's significant. It's going to be less income if you can only build two runs. And even if you do kennels or something, you're going to have to take time to go out there and shift dogs around, whatnot, versus eight kennels you can let them be. But I don't know about the other pieces.
And for me to move the dog kennels into the other garage takes away from the open space that I have. Like, I'd have to build a wall, I'd have to put a door, like I'd have to do all the, I can't have six boarding dogs in kennels while I have dogs playing in the same place. I personally can't do that. Like, that's just not, to me, that's fine.
Then you get barking dogs.
Yeah, and I just, so, I mean, this would be, so for me to take away that space and then bring it to the other side of the garage, it's honestly, it's not enough.
Mm-hmm. And again, though, it's not a financial hardship, it's that there's no ability to use the property, like a use hardship.
Yeah, you can't look really at financial impact with what the Board of Adjustment is supposed to consider.
And so that's how the fact the daycare use could use the outdoor area that met a setback came into play, I guess, because you could still have kennels inside and they just wouldn't have outdoor area. It wouldn't limit all of the use of the property.
So what I'm hearing from you guys is that you don't want them to approve the 25 acres.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
We recommend a denial, yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, if there's a really good reason, a structural reason, I would get it.
And again, to clarify, the Planning and Zoning Commission doesn't make recommendations on variances. So they didn't recommend on the variance. They just recommended the condition that the fence met the 50-foot setback.
Okay. So she said she doesn't.
Okay, we'll do what you want. We would love the various.
Right, I'm not gonna give up this opportunity because of 25 feet. I'm just disappointed because it's growth and expansion for Slater. It is a new business. It is bringing other people into it, so it doesn't. It's hard for me, besides the code says, to not do it. I work in Des Moines, and we deal with the street and the locality. I work for a development company, and we deal with these kind of obstacles all the time on a much bigger scale. So I'm surprised what a big deal it is for this kind of network, with no impending development even coming in. And like I said, I work in downtown Des Moines. And these kind of things. And we're looking at what is good now, what's good for the business now, what's good for the land use now, as opposed to what's going to happen because there's a total.
Well, if there's an impact with noise, it's going to be noticed outdoors probably more than it'll be noticed indoors because, again, the building is insulated. There's plans to insulate the south end of it, but. Again, that's another thing that we're trying to get at is if there is a noise issue, it's probably going to be noticed more with the dogs being outdoors versus the dogs being inside.
But honestly, 25 feet, I don't feel makes a difference with that.
It's a minimum. They could extend it further than the 50-foot requirement. Further to the east.
Oh.
We're trying hard to figure out if that's where you go.
Whether the noise is blocked by the edge of the building or whether the noise is blocked by the cedar fence that I have to pay for additionally, 25 feet, I think the noise is going to be different. You know what I mean? This way or that way, I think the noise is noise, in my opinion. And when you walk 25 feet, like when I was out there with this guy, it's a significant amount of space, but I mean, I can hear you when you're 25 feet, whether, you know what I mean, you're over there or whether I'm over here. Like, I can hear you, or I can see you, or I can, you know what I mean, the impact that those 25 feet make, I don't know. It's noise, not for personally.
I am in agreement with that. I was one pointing lab, and he's very loud, and whether you're 50 feet or 25 feet, he's very loud.
He's so loud.
So if you've got four or five or eight dogs out there barking, 25 feet isn't going to make a difference in that argument.
And the dogs won't be unattended.
No, but no, I mean, we're just talking about noise. Yeah, no, I'm not worried about that. It's really a can we try and staff is saying just shift the east line over 25 feet. That's basically what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. That would meet the minimum requirements.
I think the other thing to think about is, you know, we had another dog boarding case tonight. And when they came in to apply for the permit for their new building, they had proposed a 2-foot setback. And then they moved it to meet the 50-foot setback. And so we might, you know, have more of these in the future. And so that's something for the board to think about, too, is reducing the setback through a variance with these types of uses. If this would really be a truly unique case, that would, you know, not allow just anybody to get the same variance in the future, or not.
We have a dog to take care downtown, and that is, you know, like fenced in, and honestly, you walk by it and you're done.
Are you talking that you would have to move the garage door on the east side? But it's already built?
It's already all built. The whole building's already built. Yeah, I don't have to change anything with the outdoor. I mean, the building is the only thing I have to change in order to make this happen is the garage. Like, that would be the only thing that I have to change to the structure of the building, which would just be.
So it looks like if you do move the fence, then you lose the ability for them to go out, what, four kennels?
It's over. I believe it probably would be about four or five kennels.
Yeah. Staff, is it a concern that this sets a precedent?
Well, yeah, and that not just for it's that the precedent would be that the legal principles of variance aren't met, too. So if you could make new findings about the legal principles, you'd be okay, but.
I have another question on design. It looks like you could still move two kennels then to the south, and not using and not destroying your garage door, but then making your overhead door to the kennel area back up by 2 8-by-10 kennels. Is that feasible?
Once you get into the garage, like so, that garage that will be for it has an open garage, but it also has a door from the play area
right
there. So that takes away, you know what I mean, a significant amount of feet as well.
Right.
So most of the kennels do, you know what I mean, they would mm-hmm. shift towards the back.
What kind of wall is this that separates the kennels from the play area?
It's an insulated.
Okay. 4x4. 4x6.
Probably more 4x6.
4x6, probably. I'm a good space relations person, so that I was in order to appease the established variance. I was just trying to shift the kennels down to the south and change the smaller inside door, but I don't know how feasible that. Are y'all looking at that? Because that way it would allow you, you might lose one kennel, but at least you would lose them all. So, I'm trying to work with you here.
A big thing too is this part of my land where the fence is now shifting 25 extra feet. It's muddy. Like it's.
When did you build the building?
It was there.
Oh, it was there.
Yep. Yeah, it was already there. He did a lot of. I mean, he really like beautiful, and I don't think I feel the need on it to sell. I don't think it was on his radar, or I don't think he probably would have put so much work and energy into it.
So we're gonna have a separate thing.
Is the construction of this building like a pole building? So there's no really, other than the exterior walls, there's currently no interior wall?
No, there are interior walls. Yeah, pretty much four rooms in the garage. So I have my large garage, where I have my car.
On the south end, where the kennels would be, isn't that all open?
It is. Finished on the north side, on the south side, that where we would put the kennels and the doggy doors, is not insulated.
But it's all open space.
It's all big open.
So you could create design space.
Right. It's that outdoor access that we're trying
to. I would like to avoid having dogs play across the hall from each other. You know, so I would like to, again, they're not going to be in there all day for 10, 12 hours by themselves anyways, but I would like it to, you know what I mean, to have a nice walkway. I need to be able to clean it. I need to be able to do all those things. So ideally, I wouldn't want to put, you know what I mean, six long kennels, you know what I mean, going three against one wall and three against the other to meet measurements. I would like to do them all on one side.
So your 2 8x10 kennels are for the doggy daycare though, right?
Right, or if she has someone overnight that has two big dogs that want to be housed together.
Right, okay.
Kids in the evening, you know.
So are those doors, where are those doors to that kennel?
They are movable kennels.
Oh, okay.
So they're just.
Okay.
They'd be added just for size-wise, if I needed to select a company. You know what I mean? Like, the lady who I bought this huge kennel from, she had two great names.
Mm-hmm.
But they really couldn't together alone multiple times, so she bought these ginormous kennels. So you can put a divider in the inside, you know, in the middle between them, or it can be one large.
So my question then now comes back to you guys. So when you were looking at this design, your comment to them was that the fence would have to be moved to where half of the kennels.
I think Amelia hit on it in the very beginning of her presentation. I think the first communication was probably with me, and we did communicate what the requirements were.
Okay.
And you know, the building and the outdoor runs had to meet that minimum 50-foot requirement. If there's an adjacent dwelling, then it's got to be 200 feet.
Okay.
But we didn't really want. It's not for us to get into the actual design of the interior space. That's up to the applicant.
Right.
But, you know, we have this requirement for a 50-foot minimum, and again, you know, we think it's worthwhile to consider what the future of this area will be.
So then it comes back to you guys in that you knew it was a possibility that that would have to be moved before you designed your...
We didn't look at the fence before. We were looking at the building.
At the inside. Okay, and then, okay.
Any other questions, comments from the board?
Was this covered where if they set it back 50 feet,
mm-hmm.
that whether it's three or four kennels, whichever would be affected, mm-hmm. Would they be allowed to have a run going to the setback? Would they be allowed to, instead of having the fence on the end of the building, the point is to let the dogs out, okay? So would they be allowed to have the doggy, as you can see, they've got, I think they're like doggy doors. So would they be allowed to at least have a run coming off of those and going over to the new fencing, the 50-foot set? No? Why not? If it's part of the building and not a fence.
This building's required to meet 50-foot setbacks too?
All
aspects of the boarding and daycare uses are?
Well, but this building doesn't meet that.
There's a variance request for the building, too, that you're considering.
So there's three separate actions, the conditional use permit for the uses, and the two variances, one for the building and one for the proposed fence.
And with the building, I think the main difference is that's existing. You know, it's...
That can be though the reasoning that you allow the 50-foot, or the 50-foot, or the 25-foot setback, is because it attaches to an existing building. That doesn't mean it meets the 50-foot setback requirement. I don't know. I'm trying to justify one way or the other. I totally agree with you on the aspect of we just told these people that they have to, that they're building a new building. Whereas this is an existing building, and I know the agricultural fence doesn't mean the same thing, but it's in conjunction with what is built there, and what would best business model suit the place. So I don't know. That's. Anybody else have comments?
So I think with. Our new findings of fact that we do, we need to go through the staff report and edit all of the legal principles for the variance for the fence, if you're going to go with that.
Well, and they should be stated by the Board of Adjustment.
That's what I'm saying. As a citizen, I could say the building's there. They want to make the best of the usage of the building.
Yeah.
And so, therefore... Since it's not a new building and there's no...
So we could do that. We could go through each one if you wanted to. And we'll take notes and you could make new findings of fact. That's what we could do.
If the board... Do we have a motion on that?
I guess I'm just caught between a rock and a hard place because I can see both sides and I don't know if there's a better way to come to a conclusion. But I'm only one person on the board, so...
Right. That's why I was saying, that's what the board wants to do.
If that's what the board wants to do, we can work through the findings of fact with you. Okay. So the first finding of fact relates to reasonable return on the property. Without a variance, the property owner cannot... essentially use the property. And so the existing finding of fact is that 12, 11 and 12.
Okay, thank you. Do we need a motion?
You could do a motion and then this could be the discussion around the motion, I suppose.
I move that we examine the findings of fact.
For the fence variance.
Fence variance.
Okay. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aaron?
Yes.
Okay.
Aye.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So I think the first hurdle with this first finding of fact is that the land in question cannot yield a reasonable return. So there's an existing single-family dwelling, and so for the existing building, staff said, you know, if they couldn't use the building, they'd have to basically sell the property. But you could still bring in the fence 25 feet and do a daycare use. You might not be able to do a boarding use, but it's still some use of the property. I mean, even with the boarding use. Without any dog daycare or boarding use, you can still use the property as a dwelling and an accessory structure. So this one's kind of hard to meet. but you'd need to conclude that there would be no reasonable return without dog boarding, and there's no way to reconfigure the fence either.
Well, the reasonable return, maybe that's true in this business, but there's probably many other people who would purchase that acreage and be perfectly happy with no fence because they're not going to mm-hmm. do the dog, right? You know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so yeah, it doesn't seem like I'm in your camp. But it's just hard for if you take a look at a property and you see a building here, mm-hmm. you kind of in your mind go, oh yeah, I could do this,
right.
That
exactly.
would work. Well, you know, most people don't look to see if this building is where it should be, because it's there. It must be right. It's for sale. And then we run into these snags fairly regularly.
As an accessory use, it would be a permitted setback, because there's a 10-foot minimum setback for an accessory use.
Right.
And then, so looking at boarding or daycare, then that's where there's an increase. Mm-hmm. Again, these are minimums. They could always increase that amount of distance.
Isn't a run an accessory?
Yeah, but it's a condition. It's the dog boarding.
I'm trying.
I don't know. I looked at the standard. Sometimes I'm just talking to Jerry. You can imagine me in my office staring at this thinking, huh?
Well, we do know that it was purchased with the intent to run this business.
Mm-hmm.
I guess to me the question is there a change in the return sufficient from two runs to eight runs or whatever the difference is, four to eight, whatever it is sufficient to find that there's a it's no longer a reasonable rate of return?
I don't think that's what that's written.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not written specifically for this type of business. So, I feel like what you're asking is like maybe valid if. Like the local jurisdiction said, this has to be a boarding or doggy daycare. I mean, that's what it's zoned, so it has to be that. And then we say, well, it has to be that, but you can't put your fence where you want to put it. Then I would say that we would have to look at it from a, you know, this doesn't make sense because you're telling me that's what it is, but then I can't use it. But acreages in Story County are very desirable.
Still necessarily come with
most people don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with this, because obviously there's a need if you're running, you know, animals.
What do these lines indicate at the bottom? What do those lines mean, Jamal?
Oh, you know what? I just put those because I was measuring.
Okay.
So that's just me.
Well, I got that. So are they a certain footage? No?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
Future yard lights. Okay.
I think the other thing that maybe I wasn't super clear on is this 50-foot setback is for all conditional uses. So in an A1 district, a conditional use has to have a 50-foot setback.
It's listed in
it's not
the
just for, like, dog boarding?
No, I know.
Yeah.
I
mean, okay,
I mean,
great.
Everything. No, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I
okay.
That.
Sorry, I didn't think I said that before.
Define conditional use.
Okay. Do you want me to?
I mean, unless it's a page long.
Let's look. Yeah, I mean, it's listed in the table of conditional uses, but a permit issued for a use specified in these regulations identifying specific conditions, limitations, or restrictions, which is subject to review for approval or denial by the Board of Adjustment, and then we have a table that lists all the conditional uses in the conditional use permit chapter. It says dog breeding or boarding or kennel and outdoor areas used for those uses.
Like Molly said, it's not going to stop what she does. You know, that 25 feet is going to stop her from doing it. Just, you just might have to have an additional doggy door on the other side of the kennel area.
We don't want to break any laws. We want to be good neighbors.
No, I understand. Yeah, I understand that.
And guys, I think this is the hardest one to meet.
Yes.
This standard is the hardest one to meet.
I think so.
You know, I think for the other standards, we could maybe get through easier together. This is, you know, the number one standard where most variances don't get recommended for approval, I'd say. Unfortunately, we don't have to deal with that. Sorry, guys.
Is that building 30 feet away from the property line or
20,
10?
25?
It's 25. That's why the fence line would have been 25. And
but it says 30 feet to the property line.
Yeah.
Oh, on the site plan?
When I first arrived, the building was actually measured and it was 30 feet.
It's 25.
So the building, the existing building is 25.
It's 25.
So what you're saying should happen is the drawing that they have needs to move
25
another
feet.
25
feet. Not the building, just the
fence.
Line.
The right, fence.
Line.
I have
so it goes from 85 feet wide to 6 feet wide.
No, because she'll move her other line over 25 feet.
I'm sorry, what?
I said one benefit, it did take the price down a couple $1,000.
There you go.
Would you, and are you going to move your east line, fence line, and over?
25 feet away from all of the edges of the property. So, yeah.
So this is going to come in 25 feet.
Yeah, it all has to come in. So this has to come in. This just goes this direction. But, yeah, this has to go in. And then he had to remeasure because this was going to go all the way out to here. So we had to remeasure that. So this has to go in 25. This has to go in 25. It's 25 all the way around.
Oh, I got a different. This looks more like
that's it. The first one.
That's the first one. This is what it would then look like.
That's what it would look like.
Okay.
With the 25 feet.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah. You've moved this into 50. This is now 50.
Yep.
And this you moved over 25.
Correct.
Or I should say you moved it 25.
Pretty
you
much it's just
over.
25, 25.
You just 50.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's just 50 all the way around the whole entire property now.
And the 85 is very similar to that.
No, are you talking about this right here?
Yeah.
Well, it says 85.94.
Yeah.
Well, unless I'm... Yeah,
no, that's okay. I have the... okay, so fence 1. So 3B, it ends up... I mean, it made it significantly shorter. So, like, this will come in... So this fence now is only 110 feet, as before it was.
Kind of 10 feet north of the building.
Correct.
Or south, I guess.
Maybe the chair.
Right, this is north. Right.
Well, I wasn't sure about that either because they kept talking about the south side is where the kennels are going to be, which is going to be this side, right?
Correct. Anyway.
I have a question on the boarding. Of this one.
Our recording secretary. Okay.
So when you don't have the doggy doors going outside from the kennel,
correct?
Do you depend? Are those locked at night? Okay, so it's not a matter of having an access for the animal to get out to pee or poop.
Okay,
correct.
Instead of 150. And it gets 25.
50 feet.
Or the 50.
All the way around. Yeah. So now it's 50 feet from every property line.
Okay. Square footage of that versus square footage of this. You know.
Yep. I believe it.
So do you guys have the drawing sheets?
Well,
I just got them.
Yeah.
That's why it's kind of confusing because her measurements, she's within the 25.
Well, that's her using.
That's the one. Yeah, this is the one just that you're giving them. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like, this is the one she wants. So that's
I had the finishing guy come back out and do it with the 50-50-50 so that I had
it. This one comes out half, your new one comes out halfway from the shed and then.
Correct.
And then she had to bring
the shorter.
So that's why you're losing.
How much did.
Because you won't have the access because you can move them over.
But how much footage did you have to come
in? I have to go 50 feet all the way through.
But I mean, this was at 85, so what?
And so now
so how much? So you had to bring this in 25 also?
Almost. Yep, I had to bring. Well, I had to bring it in 50 from the property line.
Okay. Uh-huh. More, it can go more that way.
Yep. Yeah, it does. But it's still 50 feet. It's still 50.
This is her new. This is her new one.
Yep.
But I mean, from the original.
I had to shift. Yeah. I had to shift.
But she also had to shift to this up. So.
Alright.
That's my reason.
Are we ready to go back into session? Alright. We've done that before.
So how much yardage? Do you know how much yardage you lost?
By
doing that drawing?
Yeah.
I don't recall exactly, but it was quite new. I'm going to see for sure.
What was the question?
How many square feet is she losing?
Oh.
Yeah.
No, it equaled over $2,000.
Well, I can call my math daughter. I'm sure she can do it for me.
It's not our strong suit.
Mine either.
I will put a motion on the table, you guys.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Please.
As much as I do sympathize with the situation, due to the fact that there was some knowledge of both parties that this could happen, I'm going to recommend the
I think it's the third alternative for the fence. Yeah.
The third alternative was where the variance request for the 25-foot variance be required to go to 50-foot setback. I'm sorry, I'm reading this wrong. Number three.
Of the first, second, or third?
About the fence.
Okay.
So it's a motion to deny.
Yes, it's a motion to deny. As put forth in case VAR05-18.
Okay. So should we do these individually?
Yes.
First, okay, so let's do the alternative for the CUP 1018. So
we have a motion for the fence, so Sherry started.
Okay, all right, so we'll finish that one then. Okay.
Do you want me to rescind that and start at the beginning?
No, that's fine.
We can go back.
All right. So we have the motion to deny the variance request for a 25-foot variance to the required 50-foot setback for the existing accessory building to be used for the Onken dog boarding use as put forth in variance.
No.
That's not right?
No, it's for the fence only.
It's just the fence.
The accessory building, we're recommending a
pool. Oh, this one. Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought we were in the middle. All right. I'm sorry. Okay, so we're denying the variance for the fence. So we need a second to that motion before we can approve. Okay. So we have a motion by Youngberg, a second by Matt, and we need a roll call vote.
The discussion.
Oh, we have done discussion. I'm sorry. Thank you. So discussion. We have the discussion. Okay. So now we need a roll call vote.
Youngberg.
Aye.
Brecky.
Aye.
Neubauer.
Aye.
Carlin.
Aye. Okay. So we've got that one done. Now we're going to do the
first one.
The first one, which is the CUP 10-18.
Mm-hmm. And I'll remind you, you might want to amend one of the conditions, depending on what you're thinking, for the maximum number with this.
Oh, is that this first one here?
The dog number.
The 15. You might want to amend
it's
that
for
to
15 total
30.
Sure.
Great.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And what if she wanted to amend it to 15?
So 15 for
the
parent.
Then
the
30. And then 15 for possible up to 30 for 15 more for boarding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion that we accept number 2 for alternatives for the Board of Adjustment to use as put forth in CUP 10-18 with conditions that also include an additional 15 dogs allowed for boarding in addition to the 15 that have been accepted for daycare.
And so that's for a total of 30.
Yep.
Seconded.
So we have a motion by Youngberg and a second by Neubauer to approve the Story County Board of Adjustment, the conditional use permit for the Onken dog boarding use in CUP 10-18 with the additional or the change to the condition that there would be a maximum number of dogs permitted to 15 and then an additional 15 in the boarding kennel.
I have a discussion question.
Sure.
You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 kennels plus the 2 at 8 by 10. So 8 dogs plus 2 is 12 plus another 2.
Sometimes you might have two small dogs that they want.
That you might want to put in these one along the wall. Or, yeah. Okay. I just wanted to question that. You're not going to put 3 dogs in one kennel, I'm sure. Yes, so I'll come.
Okay, so we have a motion and we have a second. Roll call, please.
Brecky.
Yes.
Youngberg.
Yes.
Starlin.
Yes.
Neubauer.
Yes.
Okay, that's 2. Third one is the alternative for VAR 0518.
Why is that the same number?
Because we're allowing the building to be 25 feet instead of 50.
I move that we accept alternative 1. Story County Board of Adjustment approves the variance request for a 25-foot variance to the required 50-foot setback for the existing accessory building to be used for the Onken dog boarding use as put forth in case VAR 05-18 as submitted.
I'll second.
All right. Any discussion before we move on? Roll call, please.
Scarlett.
Yes.
Neubauer. Yes.
Number.
Yes.
Brady.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. You're welcome. Good luck. Just drop the pizza off on your way by.
Holiday
week,
I'm
going
to be making
right now.
Oh, okay.
What are you calling your place?
Just
Onken dog dog boarding?
It's dog district right now, but maybe it might be like Flo and Friends or something. Cute and happy.
That's
because after all, it is all about the dog.
Oh, right.
I'm not even mad about it. So Christmas card. It's a closed one. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Have a good night.
All right. On to our discussion and consideration of VAR 0618, Manat's variance request. Emily.
Okay. We are looking at this site plan here. The last one.
Oh. All right.
Okay. So this is a request by Manat.
Is that what's the black dirt pile down at the bottom? And the retention pond?
This
is the right one?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct. Yep.
Thank you.
So this is a request also for a variance, for a 32-foot variance from 50 required 50-foot setback to 18 feet, which is required for a front yard setback for other permitted uses in the A1 agricultural district for a temporary job trailer to be located 18 feet west of the front, which is the east lot line. So if you probably recognize this location, this is the southwest corner of the Highway 30 Dayton Avenue interchange. As you know, we have two existing conditional use permits on this property. One is the construction demolition landfill, temporary construction demolition landfill site, and then the other is a concrete and asphalt plant, temporary concrete and asphalt plants. And those conditional use permits were last month extended, the timeline was extended until the end of 2020 for those uses. So the request is for that job trailer that's located on the very eastern edge of the property. There's a 50-foot required setback from essentially where that red line is, and they are asking for a 32-foot variance from that to have it positioned 18 feet from the east lot line.
To keep it in its current.
To keep it in its current configuration. Let's see.
The duration?
The duration. So, again, these uses are permitted on the site through the end of 2021. The conditional use permit.
And the red dotted line is the concrete block wall.
Yeah, that there are, well, you just... Yeah, they're working toward compliance on that. They didn't want to request a variance for that, but they did want to request a variance for the job trailer.
Well, they're going to need a variance for the wall, too.
They're working toward compliance. We haven't actually issued the permit for the wall yet because we're waiting for you to make a motion on the findings of fact for the conditional use permit extension. So, So at this location along Dayton Avenue, the right-of-way extends, as you can see, from the east side of Dayton Avenue all the way to up to that red line, which is indicating their property line. And that's a width of 282 feet in this location. Typically, county roads have a right-of-way width of 66 feet. Sometimes it's 90, but 282 is definitely significantly larger than the norm. The actual job trailer itself is located. Let's see. I apologize here. The job trailer is located approximately 182 feet from the center of South Dayton Road.
And that's the wider road.
Right, yep, that's the larger road.
Okay.
There's that frontage road there, which is located in the road right-of-way, and the trailer is approximately 66 feet from the center of that.
Okay.
As well. So... I will go through and look at the standards. What?
Yeah.
The standards for approval of the the legal principles for the variance. The first one is finding of unnecessary hardship. The land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if used only for a purpose allowed in that zone. Staff's comment on this one is that to find the principle of reasonable return is met, other potential locations for the proposed use must be considered. The potential locations for a temporary job trailer are limited to the conditional use boundary, the location of the conditional use and that boundary on this site, as having a temporary job trailer on a different site would really diminish its intended use. Locating the job trailer in a location that meets the 50-foot setback requirement, we felt unnecessarily increases the potential of danger to the Manats employees working on the site. Having the trailer in this location set as far to the east as possible increases the maneuvering space for trucks and other construction equipment, increases the separation distance from the concrete plant, and decreases the number of vehicle and pedestrian trips across the site to the temporary job trailer. The primary goal of this location is the safety of its inhabitants while maintaining proximity to the operation as well as the access to the site. The second finding of a necessary hardship is the plight of the owner is due to unique circumstances and not due to general conditions in the neighborhood, which may reflect the unreasonableness of the ordinance itself. The temporary job trailer is a use associated with the temporary asphalt and concrete plant's use, which is a conditional use permit that is permitted through December 31st of 2021.
So they will be gone?
They will. It's a temporary use.
Why not temporary? But is it going to be renewed?
They own the property, and potentially they could be, but there's some conditions that allows them to come back and request an extension, but it's, you know, it'll be based on project projection.
South Dayton Avenue Road, right of way along the east side of the property. It does vary, but again, it's approximately 282 feet wide at this location. The trailer is proposed to be located 182 feet from the center of South Dayton Avenue and 66 feet from the center of the frontage road. So there's ample amount of space between South Dayton Avenue and the proposed and the existing location of the temporary job trailer. Additionally, this is a portable structure. It will be removed at the end of the use of this site for the asphalt and concrete plants. It can also be transported if flooding is in the forecast. Number three is the use to be authorized by the variance will not alter the essential character of the locality. Again, there's existing conditional use permits for the asphalt and concrete plants, which are visible from Highway 30 and South Dayton Avenue. The site is buffered on the west side by a wooded area and to the south by agricultural natural area. The adjacent parcel to the north is located between the subject property and the city of Ames, but it's a part of the construction and demolition landfill site conditional use boundary, which is also on the subject property. U.S. Highway 30 buffers the use from the properties to the north of the highway. This is in that gateway area designated on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, but again, when compared to the asphalt and concrete plants and stockpiles, the job trailer is very small and not very prominent on the site. If I had could show you pictures, I would. The temporary job trailer will be removed from the site when the use has ceased. Any impacts on the character of the locality will be temporary. And then B, granting the variance will not be contrary to the public interest. Here, we just want to speak to the safety of the inhabitants on the site. We think having the job trailer as close to the entrance and access to the property as possible, and far further away from the large machinery, traffic, and then the asphalt and concrete plants, improves the safety of the employees on the site. Also, the public interest in allowing uses that support transportation infrastructure meets the Ames Urban Fringe Rural Urban Transition Area designation policy, which is to permit interim development to occur in a manner that will support long-term urbanization of the Ames Urban Fringe. And then finally, C, the spirit and intent of the Story County Development Plan and Story County Land Development regulations are protected. Safety, public health, safety, and welfare is the intent of the Story County land development regulations, and this will ensure compatibility of uses and efficient and orderly development. The concrete and asphalt plants and the associated job trailer are permitted in the A1 district through a conditional use permit through 2021. The asphalt and concrete plant use is within the intent of the Story County Land Development Regulations and the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is as necessary for public transportation projects that in turn support public safety, efficiency of the projects, and long-term growth of the area. We did route this to other departments in the county. We sent notification letters to property owners within a quarter mile of the site, and we have not received any comments. So in terms of our recommendation, it is planning and development staff's recommendation to approve the variance request for a 32-foot variance from 50 feet to 18 feet to the front setback requirement for all other uses, including conditional uses, permitted in A1 agricultural district by Table 86-2 as put forth in case VAR-0618, and that is alternative number one. Questions on that?
Any questions, board?
Nope.
None there?
I would like to, if we make motion to accept that, I would like to put an additional condition on it that after 3 years that the 50-foot setback is revisited.
But it ends in 3 years.
Yeah, but if they continue to occupy the space.
So I think your intent here is that the variance will expire with the existing conditional use permit.
I mean, I'm trying to follow suit as in, you know, you make an exception for one person, you got to be really careful about the next one, and I understand why this one was made. But let's say they rearrange stuff out there,
sure.
And all of a sudden there's no reason they can't move it
sure.
to the 50-foot setback. So I would like to make an addition that this barrier expires at the same time.
Okay.
Is that doable?
Or is that assumed?
That could be.
They have a year. But they have a year to...
Would the variance expire also with the...
We're just thinking about the CUP, and there's a condition that they have a year after that one expires to bring another application request to extend that use.
They better move the trailer then.
Or apply for another variance with their...
Don't put that in the record, please.
She's driving by dog boarding places, and now she's going to be chasing down there.
I mean, if that trailer was out where, you know, 50 feet out, it would be a massive hazard.
It would be. That's what our point is.
Around the wrong side of it.
Which is why I'm not opposing it.
And usually they are closer to where the access area is. It's right there where you...
Yeah.
But who knows in 4 years how they may set that
they may set it up differently out there. I don't know. I'm not.
Like, can you connect it to the conditional use permit somehow? To just sort of.
Yeah, I think we can say the variance is in effect through the end of the conditional use permit.
Within a year.
Right, but they'll still have to renew it.
At the end of that year, after 2021, they have a year.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
So why did they want this through 2020? This is through.
They wanted that permanent. They wanted a permanent use there, the C&D use, and.
And we said.
The Board of Adjustment approved a three-year extension, and then look at the use at that the end of that time.
So I guess I'm not understanding what.
So the
trailer conditional use is expiring at a year different from.
No. I apologize. I think I said 2020. I meant to say 2021. With the conditional use permit, there's a condition that says if they stop using the site for a year, they may maintain the gravel pad, which they had to build up because of the floodplain. They may maintain that for up to a year, during which time they need to apply for an additional conditional use permit. So they're not totally removing the whole pad.
They're not exiting per se, maybe.
Per se, the use stops, so it's probably just empty, likely. But the
another reason why they might need to move the trailer.
So the conditional use permit we approved last month has this sort of built-in one-year grace period.
Right. Mm-hmm. To allow them time to obtain more bids for projects, too.
So we could tie this variance to expire at the same time as that grace period expires.
We could work that out administratively. We could work it administratively.
Yeah, so the variance ends with the conditional use permit, or the existing conditional use permit.
Do you like that? I think if that works for their department better, that's fine.
Okay. So we have a motion by Karen. We have a second.
Yeah.
Do.
Is that fine? Is
yeah,
that
I think so. Motion?
Okay.
And aligns with the conditions of the CUP.
Yes.
Yeah. I was just going to say, can you kind of restate that?
Sure, easy to say that, Stephen.
She wasn't listening to herself.
So I wasn't here last month, but you're saying, was it basically the same time frame?
Yeah. We approved the conditional use last month.
The conditional use ends in 21, but they have a year to
resubmit
the use, which means then that if we say the trailer ends at the end of the permit, it has to be gone in 21, where in essence they may not be really leaving until 22. So, right?
As long as they have that year grace period, we can deal with that.
Yeah. So I
gotta find
somebody else.
And likely, if they're not using the site, the job trailer is going to be on a different site because it's mobile.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah, we.
So we'll have to have it taken back.
So I move that we accept option one.
I think you want to propose option two because that involves
with conditions.
Yep.
Okay. So I move that we adopt option two for VAR 0618 with the initial condition that the variance will expire at the expiration of the current conditional use permit.
Second.
Or third.
We have.
We're rewriting the world tonight.
It is.
You're
reading it. No. It's the old fault. We have a motion by Matt, a second by Krecky to accept option number two with a condition of the expiration date.
All, we need a roll call, right? Okay, so roll call.
In conjunction with the expiration.
In conjunction. Okay.
It's recorded.
Okay, Youngberg.
Yes.
Reggie.
Yes.
Neubauer.
Yes.
Carvin.
Yes. All right, motion carries. All right, next item, board staff comments.
Keep them brief.
You like?
Keep them brief.
Thank you.
As you already know, we have some issues with our audio-visual equipment, and it's scheduled to be fixed within the next week or two. So hopefully by the next Board of Adjustment.
It's January.
January, are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to come up with, if we have, right now we don't have any cases, but the deadline isn't for a few weeks. So one thing to keep in mind for the December 19th meeting is, according to our bylaws, that's when you elect new officers. So you will need to elect a new chair and a new vice chair. And our vice chair has decided not to request a renewal. And so she will be resigning from the Board of Adjustment. Mm-hmm. And we've greatly enjoyed working with you, Lynn.
Well, thank you.
And you've really served the citizens of Story County well.
Thank you.
And you sure you won't reconsider?
And after a night like this?
Yeah. This isn't bad, though, because I heard the stories about the midnight and 1 o'clock meetings.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. It is kind of fun.
Yeah, it is.
Especially when you got crazy questions coming from Orangeville.
I know you don't have anyone in.
Yeah, the board staff and the board interviewed a candidate for the position who decided ultimately to withdraw their application. So we're told by the staff from the board that they need to repost or publish, so it won't be for another 90 days. And so we need 5 members, so we're going to have to go through that process again to seek out a candidate.
But if I change my mind, I don't have to reapply, do I?
Actually, it does take board action, but the first thing we would do is check to see if we have your application and use the existing application.
Yeah, I interviewed with Wayne Clinton.
Yeah, so we should have something on file. But if you would like to stay on, please let us know as soon as possible.
Yeah, I will. Let me think about it tonight. Okay. And I'll let you know tomorrow.
And so, like I said, we don't have any cases. One of the things that will be before our Planning and Zoning Commission next month is our work program. We sit down with the Planning and Zoning Commission members and the Board of Supervisors every December and go through really what amount to our special projects. And right now, a lot of those special projects have come from our C2C plan, comprehensive plan. This year, we had a lot of other things that we worked on that took up a lot of our time. But one of the things is that work program. So we thought it would be kind of interesting to maybe just go through what some of those items are at the next meeting, December or the January meeting. So we'll go through that and let you know what kind of things we work on other than conditional uses and variance requests. Mm-hmm. This is really kind of a minimal amount of activity compared to some of the other things that we do. So that's all I have. Thanks for your service.
Anything from the board? Did we have fun tonight?
It was interesting.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
I know.
We had fun. All right. Well, with that said, I need a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Oh,
God, I was going to say, come on.
You guys.
Stay longer.
No. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.